2 months.
Okay. One of the Soviet signed is another.
So one of them signed in August?
The other minister was not there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can,
I think the only thing I can do is just to go back and verify. I'm going to kill myself now. Yeah.
Can we bring the flag that to study?
If we look at the whole delegation, that's the delegation, members, are you satisfied that everyone is there, including yourself? I think it's only Honorable Member Paul, sir, that wasn't with us at that date. Coming to the purpose of the study tour, the Zoos regarded as country with one of them. So I want to propose that prediction. Was one of the most extensive and indeed one of the most successful strategies to deal with food insecurity. The program known as Zero Hunger Campaign has brought together various social security and economic development initiatives to develop and implement the biggest food security program globally. The program is led by the Minister for Social Development, and the prediction here of the ministry will be then pursued. The ministry also oversees the Bolsa Familia program, which is the Zoso social assistance program, and then just a cat corrections there, which reaches 43 million people on a monthly basis. Okay. The Brazilian social and economic context is very similar to South Africa's. Until recently, Brazil was the most unequal society in the world. South Africa has similar dynamics in relation to rural poverty as opposed to relative high levels of development in most urban areas, because not all of our urban areas are developed in South Africa. We still have development challenges in our urban areas. If you can just look at the city of Cape Town, you can see for yourself. Since we are resident here, if you look at Joburg and everywhere. The Zero Hunger program includes the Bolsa Familia component, has been the biggest contributor to Brazil's reduction in its poverty and inequality levels. I think that's a very important statement. Over and above the aforementioned, Brazil has a well-established, here you have national. So, I wanted to propose that we say, you either say a single national registry, or you say a single registry. A national. So single means one, national registry. Yeah. Single national. Yeah. So we say single national. For all social programs called, okay, Cadastro Único, and then I'll stop there. It is aimed at identifying the socioeconomic profile of the entire poor population to inform central government on the effective demand for pro-poor policy. And here we will just say you'll just have to sort out the ministry issue again for us. Okay. It was created in 2003 with authority and the responsibility to plan and execute social assistance and food security policies within the central government. It is the largest and most comprehensive database on poor households and individuals, serving as a backbone for Bolsa Familia and other programs. This database provides data to all program systems where the other dynamic functionalities as well as more specific data on beneficiary and household livelihoods. So livelihoods with an S and are stored. these programs are linked to each other, hence their beneficiary database is the same. Then coming to paragraph 3. The delegation, also, if you look at the last sentence of the commandments, also visits Natal, which is one of the Zuls, which is one of the Zuls of city. You see, there's something wrong with that sentence. No, Natal is not a state, it's a city. Yeah, is a Brazilian city in which the Zero Hunger Campaign through the Bolsa Familia has a... It's not the only city. Is a Brazilian city in which the Zero Hunger has had a significant impact on poverty reduction. Or is one of Brazil's cities. Okay. Let's say is one of Brazil's cities. Okay? Yeah. Is one of Brazil's cities because Bolsa Familia is implemented everywhere in Brazil, right? If we look at on paragraph 3, honorable members, any changes that you want to effect there? What I want, if you do, for the sixth line in paragraph 3, as is it at the present time, if we can replace that whole section there with saying currently, poverty reduction programs are fragmented as they are implemented by various government departments. Okay? Then the government should be then the South African government. The African government's goal is to develop a comprehensive anti-poverty strategy that will address the needs of the vulnerable groups, namely children, women, youth, people living in rural areas and urban settlements, people with disabilities or chronic illnesses, and the elderly. Cabinet Minister? Yes, cover to that. With the information gained from the interaction with the Brazilian Ministry of Social Development, research institutions and representatives during the site visits, the committee stands in a better position to oversee and monitor. And not advise, because we should say monitor to members. I don't know whether members agree with that statement. Government as it transforms and integrates. I think you should take out the slash because it's also about integration. Integration leads to efficiency. Okay? As it transforms and integrates its services. Then coming to the bottom of page 2, briefing by the South African Embassy. Honourable Minister, we had a very, very fruitful sessions with the embassy, and they were extremely supportive of us. We really can't complain. The program known as Zero Hunger, if you look at the fourth line, has brought together various social security and economic development initiatives to develop and implement one of the biggest security programs globally, food security programs globally. It is on record that it's the biggest food security program. But it is one of the biggest food security programs globally. if we look at the first on page 3, Brazil established good practices, and I don't know, do members have any additions they would want to make on this paragraph? Honourable Member Mafola, any additions on this paragraph? Yeah. The ambassador.
Should be the ambassador.
As you say, the ambassador of His Excellency. You can't say he. The ambassador of His Excellency, yes. Pharmacies have blood banks and generic medicine. Pharmacies have blood banks and generic medicine is sold to ensure access to medication for people who cannot afford it. Yeah. Right. Now coming to the challenges, then we give out. After the challenges, we'll go over to the adoption presentation. The ambassador and minister here, I think this is quite interesting. The ambassador raised concerns of many with regard to many South African youth, and here I think we should say especially the unemployed, because it is people in need of funding and in need of money, especially the unemployed who are arrested in Brazil on charges of drug trafficking. And I think when the committee arrived in Brazil, just the previous week, there was someone arrested at Sao Paulo. It was pointed out that in most instances, these youth are not drug traffickers, but are involved as a means to raise money for fees, whether it is school fees, university fees, His Excellency also told the delegation that about 90% of these prisoners are living with HIV and AIDS. And I think what we should say is that before we come to the prisoners, we should say there is currently that sentence. There is more than 142 South Africans serving prison sentences in Brazilian jails for drug trafficking. Okay, 142. So that's the number that he gave us. So before we come to people that are, we refer to people that are in prison, we need to say, have qualifying statement to say there is 142 South Africans in jail in Brazil. Okay. Right?
So that should come before
Before the 90%. And some of them do not receive medication for treatment. He also indicated His Excellency also indicated that those arrested in some instances are young women who are unemployed and need money to raise their children. What I wanted to say in terms of the 142, we should also say that there's 142 South African prisons, and it's increasing because every few months people are arrested. So it's an ever-increasing number. People get out of prison, they go on the street, and the others take their place. Another concern that was raised was that once they are released, they often do not have airfares back to South Africa, and they end up on the streets of Sao Paulo. It's not just Sao Paulo, it's also Rio de Janeiro and Brasilia. So your major cities, and they get mostly arrested in Sao Paulo and in Rio de Janeiro. It is acknowledged that intervention is required to address this problem. Honourable Minister, actually ask us to bring this to the attention of Parliament and the relevant ministries. So it is in that light that we want to make a recommendation to the House on this matter. In terms of, I think we should, in terms of the relevant ministries, if you look at the issue, because if we can cast our minds back, he explained that the embassy visits the convicted prisoners twice a year. In addition, there are non-governmental organizations which provide support to homeless of Africans living on the street. What we want to bring to the attention of South Africa is that your embassies and your high commissions in foreign countries, if you have committed a crime, they don't have any responsibility towards you. They can come and check on your welfare, but they are not responsible for your welfare. Because you're now a prisoner of another sovereign state, especially if you are a sentenced prisoner. I think that should be, that message should be very clear. Because it will also be a deterrent for people to be tempted in being drug mules for scrupulous drug dealers.
The ambassador also spoke on the pressure that is put onto them from the families of these people that are in prison to get them released and to get them sent back to their homes in South Africa. So that's a very big challenge for them, because continuously they are called upon to see what they can do to get these people out of prison and get them back in South Africa. Yet there's nothing that they can do once they are sent to prison.
Thank you, Chair. I think to add what you have been saying, I would say that a different department should make the awareness campaigns to our people, because if those people are arrested, they think that we have embassy, we have South African government commissioner that will make those people to come back here. So if we, as the government, we make awareness campaigns to people that we are not responsible for what is happening there, because we didn't send anyone, it will be proper.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I was still under the impression that we are correcting the report, and then we'll still come to have some discussions. If you don't mind, I'll go back to some issues of earlier.
No, we're doing it. We said we're doing the corrections and the recommendations at the same time due to our time constraints. So we can give over to you.
Okay. But just very quickly on this one, let me just zoom in this one, because I think others are not so major. I want to suggest firstly that we probably, as portfolio committee, just bounce this matter with the other portfolio committee of DERCO to share information on how this matter can be dealt with, because indeed all the embassies and all issues of that nature would have to be located within that context of the work that's been done by DERCO. But not that we shouldn't report on it, but just to concretize any form of recommendation as to what finally you could say as a committee. That's the first thing. I'm saying that because from our side, the ambassador may not have indicated that as social development, we have had on many instances, Dr. Marie has been, I think, physically, practically to Brazil and Mexico, I think, to bring back the children of those who have been arrested. Some of them left South Africa being pregnant, either pregnant or, I don't know, for one reason or another, we end up with a baby there. And, you know, the babies are not allowed in prison up to the age of, 6 months or something like that, only above them.
Yeah, so they need to be out of prison before they reach the age of one. the first year. So if they go out of prison, they will be adopted, you know, in Brazil. So in most cases, in all cases, the South African women, those prisoners, they don't want their children to be adopted in Brazil. Rather, they want the children to be sent back here in South Africa so that they can be placed, you know, with whoever, you know, is around, you know, with the family. So one of the programs that I'm responsible for is called International Social Services. Those are the services that we render to South Africans who are outside the borders, you know, of our country. And those children, we treat them as children in distress. So, you know, we make efforts, you know, to go and fetch them. We attend court inquiries. They bring, you know, they give, you know, the children to us, and we come back, you know, with those children, hand them over to the relatives, or we place them in residential or children's homes, you know, in the meantime, and, you know, apply for foster care grant or whatever, you know, the assistance that we can do. So definitely social development is taking a major role in terms of, you know, these ladies who are being in prison, you know, all over the country. Currently, there are two twins who need to be fetched. The moment is coming up, you know, to you, Minister.
You have been twice already?
Yes.
That's between May last year and now?
Yeah.
We've been
so now there are twins that need to be fetched from Venezuela. You know, they are the same, you know, scenario. So in most cases, the drug syndicate target pregnant women. So that is why we find or we land up, you know, with children who are in prison. Last time when we went, you know, to fetch the children, on our way out of the prison, there were a group of women who were entering. And one of the warders was saying, that lady is a South African. And surely, in 9 months period, we went there and collect her child. That very particular child, that woman who was entering. So the problem is rife. And we could see in last week's Soweten, in Mauritius, you know, there are plenty of South African ladies who are being, you know, used as drugs, you know, mules. So the problem is huge, but we are, you know, taking, you know, control, and we are contributing towards managing that. But we are more, you know, in dealing with the children in distress in most particular times.
Okay, Chair, I still wanted to just to augment on what we are doing about the children, because the children are innocent. The mothers, definitely, most of them, especially, as you say, those who are convicted, there's very little that we can do on the other side. But on the before case, where there is a lot that we should do as South Africans, and I think that may have to be a topic for another day, because currently we're running a very huge campaign countrywide on substance abuse matters of this nature. So it's really where it belongs. They would not necessarily end up there if our campaign is really effective, and it must be effective.
What I want to propose is that because the experts is for the department, we can make that. The convenient thing for Parliament is we can make the recommendations. But we need advocacy then to be preventative, because in terms of your prevention strategy, you must have advocacy and awareness programs. So I want to propose that we request the Department of Social Development, Justice, SAPS, Education, and Home Affairs, and SAPS. That they should develop awareness and advocacy campaigns around these challenges of drug trafficking. Because then every department will have will deal with the outfalls as development is already doing, you know. And I think I said it in the annual report to the DG that the good work of social development needs to be profiled more. I think like this kind of groundbreaking work that you're doing in terms of the rights of children. This is what the African government is doing. and this is a consequence of drug trafficking. If you are a pregnant woman, you must know that you will be separated from your child.
Mm-hmm.
You won't keep your child there. And the one thing that the ambassador, His Excellency, told us was that your handler in Sao Paulo, immediately when he sees you are arrested, there's no contact. So you are on your own. So people, your handlers are only there to get the drugs, but they are not concerned about your welfare. And that must be driven home to people. To say, if you become a drug mule, you must know that you have absolutely no protection and you have no rights. And you are just a commodity. Honourable Member Mafolo.
Thank you, Chair. I think the information that was given to us by Dr. Mahavi is very important. I think if we can get those tests and how many children have now been taken from there, because people are saying you are not delivering, and the only time that the money is spent on another thing that are outside the country, really just to show our public how this department is. The problem that the department is undergoing. Thanks.
On the matter of advocacy campaign, what I was really trying to suggest is that maybe if it could be allowed, or there could be time, that we find space and time in the portfolio committee, if we haven't done so, because I can't remember us doing so, to come and talk specifically around the issue of substance abuse in the country, and what we are doing about it, and everybody, so that we can also follow on the roles of other departments. Because the departments you counted are still lesser than more, those that have to be involved. We're working with 14 departments. We've got the local drug committees, action committees, and provincial, and so on. So the structure which we use to deal with that campaign is not necessarily just a few limited departments. So I think if we talk to the entire program, even up to, you know, all campaigns, all areas, prevention, rehabilitation, as well as the law enforcement. Prevention deals with awareness, and harm reduction deals with rehabilitation, and then law enforcement deals with the reduction of supply. So there are those three areas. I think if we come to talk about the holistic program, because currently, as we speak, last week, we spent the whole 3 days on the ground in Free State. That other week, we spent some 2 days on the ground in Northern Cape. That's where our programs arrive. The next area we go into is this Western Cape. We'll probably be here for the whole week, day to day, doing door to door and throughout. It may also be quite necessary that honorable members also join us in some of those things.
I think that will be greatly appreciated, Minister. We've been talking about substance abuse and our concerns about it. Honourable Nelson?
I've been picked up now on prime time on TV, the premier of Northern Coast, Comrade Harrison. It's flashing FIX as well. And so maybe the department should be doing that as well, you know, to, it's fine, it's coming from somewhere now. But you know, the splicing at peak hours onto the national TV as well. Thanks, Chair.
First of all, on a matter of interest, this is excellent work done by the people involved, but we need to know about what these people are doing. We need to know and to get involved in what the people are doing in sovereignty. What I would like to know, is there any follow-up strategy, especially on substance abuse, is there any follow-up strategy going to follow, or are you busy working on it for each and every problem, or what is the situation around you?
If I may, just very quickly, of course we'll talk in detail about the entire program when we find time, but what we are doing right now is that firstly we have a hybrid organization, hybrid, public entity, if you like, called the CDA, Central Drug Authority, which consists of people from all 14 departments that are partners in substance abuse. It also has a representative of every province who's supposed to go back to the province to coordinate the provincial drug action committee action, so that at a provincial level, there's also coordination and noise and campaigns and ensuring that there are facilities every day, also reduction, policing, and so on. That work needs to be done, just like our local AIDS council and our provincial AIDS council. That's how we are structured. So there are local AIDS councils, not AIDS councils, there are local action, drug action committees as well. Why am I talking about these structures? It's because we should understand that what Premier is doing when she projects a message as a head of a province, that's what we want to hear. Because we want this campaign to take it to be taken to highest level. Even at this level of national, we're taking it into the hands of the president very soon when we go into the summit, so that it actually gets the highest to the highest in every province. So the MEC is busy with those programs, for instance, in the province Northern Cape, where we've been. The Premier was there, so we now have a common message on behalf of the Provincial Action Drug Committee. The Local Action Drug Committee should also be busy. As I say, all of us are three with these three programs. What remains in Northern Cape, for instance, what remains in Free State is that we're leaving a mobilized group, which is now a renewed group. For instance, in Free State, there is a group which is very strong. For me, I think for the first time in that province, we have that strength. The Young Free Staters, they call themselves. So they do door-to-door on a daily basis. If they find people who have problems, they do committee meetings, small committee meetings, they do house meetings, all those who are hooked already. Because we understand that if a person has been hooked, even that particular person, whether you already rehabilitated, you still have to talk to yourself every day so that you don't lapse. Yeah. So that kind of a message every day, that's why they need these clubs, they need these group discussions every day wherever they remain. So the Young Free Staters group then remains with that kind of coordination. We want to establish, through the local action committees, these very same groupings that actually deals with prevention. Let me just say this. There are other people outside our groups, outside our action groups, like, for instance, your child and youth care workers as an NGO, which does wonderful work here in Khayelitsha. They actually stand in the streets. They are part of the child and youth care workers. Among them, there are people who are called street workers. Stand in the street for the whole day, just to monitor the movement of children. If they see a child, because they know that a child would get into drugs and drop out of school, start by wrong movements every day. So they monitor the movements. When they see the child vanishing into a liquor store or into a beer hall and a shebeen or something, getting into a house that looks like and looking different, then they begin to, as part of prevention. So I'm saying we've got different action groups on the ground in different provinces for different purposes. So what we're really trying to do right now is to get a huge hype countrywide, not just towards the summit, but every day of our lives, because we realize that this problem is actually bigger than, in my view, it's something that's likely potentially to destroy this nation.
Can we, with that briefing that we've got, because I think the international program that social development is also embarking on, and what the minister told us about the substance abuse strategy now, basically casts everything into a different light for us, especially now with your comment on the CDA and so on, and the 14 departments. So it looks like the five departments I've mentioned is now small in comparison. But if we look broader, can we then, in terms of our recommendations, even if we don't do it now, we can do it later in our recommendations, then say that we need a briefing on the comprehensive substance abuse strategy. And we agree, Minister, that we as members of Parliament, whilst when you come, will you be coming to the Western Cape this year?
a matter of weeks.
Okay. Yeah. So, that says if we are still here, we will then join the minister and the NEC on campaign in the Western Cape, because it will be convenient for us. And if you go into other provinces, can you also alert us? I mean, if members have time, they can then just join in those provinces, especially where they are resident. Okay. No, thank you very much for that. For that. Honourable Member Masilo.
We're going to invite the CDA board to come and give us more briefing on their program. Thank you.
We'll invite the minister, and then the minister will use the discretion in terms of, because this, she said the 14 departments. So I would like, I'd be interested in terms of the substance abuse strategy that social development is obviously leading. I think, Minister, you are also chair of the cluster.
Yes, we're chair of the cluster of social development, but we're also a coordinating department of all 14 departments. Mm-hmm. So I fell short of saying the role of those departments, because it's 14 departments that are represented in CDA and provinces, as well as specialists who deal, who are experts in matters of substance, those from the CDA. But they have an executive, which we always travel with, which we always go along with for purpose of some technical issues, because they do research on an ongoing basis. So what I'm really trying to say is that if the CDA is here, it could, in a way, be coming as a representative of the entire department, because we are a coordinating department. So we'll talk about all three areas of work that we're doing. That's fine.
Minister, I hear you saying that you'll be working in the Western Cape, and I would really love to work with you, and I think all other members would also like to do just that. But what is happening in our rural and remote rural areas? And I would like to speak to you on something that occurred, I'll do that privately, last week in my constituency, which is Wissenberg, a real rural and remote rural area. What is happening, or is there anything being rolled out to our rural areas? Because our rural areas are also rife with substance abuse. Thank you.
The honest confession is that in the absence of a very effective implementation of a strategy, because it's not as if we don't have a strategy, effective implementation and effective committees that are on the ground, we are not quite able to become too effective, even in rural areas. Remember that the local action committees that I'm talking about, that have to deal with the prevention, are also to reach every rural area, because they function. It's like in a ward, there should be groups in every ward, in every municipality, there should be those action committees. But what we realize is that they have not been as efficient and as effective as we would have wanted them to be. That's what we are now busy doing, reviving them so that they remain plugging on the ground and doing the work. However, on the rehabilitation side, the harm reduction, we still have a lot of weakness. Countrywide, I did respond to this question in Parliament. We have 53 centers of rehabilitation. Given the magnitude of a problem, it's a drop in the ocean. That's one. Two, they are not based in rural areas, majority of them. So we do require some of them in rural areas. The question, of course, honorable members, is that, do you set up a rehab center in rural area now in anticipation of the problem growing, or do you vigorously work on reduction so that you don't need additional centers? It's a question like correction services. But where the problem is rife, we will have to put up those centers. However, what we do know and what should happen and must happen is happening, is that every center, wherever it is, should actually be in a position now to accept and to take in anybody who's from the rural area. So if they find people who are really very addicted, who require rehabilitation, who need to go to the centers, we take them there. Because it's not everybody, once again, who gets taken to the centers. Some of the people who do counseling and working on them through those small groups, wherever they are, especially those who are not quite deep inside, those who take TIC, for instance, who are already in the language of Dr. Mavi. I was with Dr. Mutualedi on radio 2 Sundays ago on this campaign. We spent the whole hour talking to the nation about this. And he was explaining how this TIC and some form of drugs, each and every one of them, attacks every part of the system. If it attacks a particular part of the system, craving becomes so, and people react differently. Some hit others, some ladder, some do whatever. Some just become cagey and sleep and so on. So it really is, if they have not reached those levels, we then work on them through those groups on the ground. So I'm not sure about the constituency. Yes, we can share the information of those things that have happened and see whether we can get people, whoever is involved in any of, whether it's revival of the group discussion to support those who are there, or it's taking whoever is responsible out of that community to the center for rehab. We'll really talk about that. Thanks.
Maybe it's just something, Minister, that if we could also get the information in terms of our community outreach programs we have all over the country. I think that is really important. I think the one issue that the Minister also touched on, whether our centres are capacitated to deal with all the problems in terms of drugs that are on the market. Are our centres capacitated to deal with heroin addiction, with TIC, or are they just capacitated to deal with Mandrax and Dacha addiction, and cocaine, and then all your derivatives of heroin and your drugs? So that is also a challenge in terms of our institutions, drug rehabilitation centers, and our outreach programs. Page 4. Any comments on paragraph 1 on page 4? Paragraph 2.
In the third paragraph, 65 years old men, the S needs to come out of the years. 65 year old men and 60 year old women. We give pensions to people when they reach the age of 60 or 65. Men. Here in Brazil, people have to contribute for 30 to 35 years to get a retirement benefit for everything.
If I may, Honourable Chair, I think by now all members would have received their invitation to a conference, an international conference that's taking place here in South Africa in the Western Cape, just across the street at the ICC, from the 29th of November to the 3rd, I think, no, the 4th, somewhere there, of December. It's a conference of social security, comprehensive social security, that deals with the world trends and world approach on these matters. We are on the board in South Africa of ESA. We currently have before us, and I'm not sure whether we have spoken to committee about this matter. We have currently before us a government-wide document, policy document, that still just needs to go to cabinet. But that has passed IMC, the Interministerial Committee. It's a document that partly addresses this matter of contributions. We need South Africans, all working South Africans, to save. In other words, we are introducing a forced saving, if you like. I may put it that crude. forced saving, where a retirement fund will be established for every working person. It won't necessarily be 35, it may be 55 years of your working time, so that we reduce long-term people who may have to actually have to fall on your social assistance program and reduce the social assistance program drastically over long-term. It's a program. It's got four pillars, a comprehensive social security issue. And I'm not going to be doing justice if I can talk about what we are really getting at. We must remember that South Africa is actually now, only now, shaping its only comprehensive social security. We only have one pillar implemented, and that one pillar was social assistance, which is the grant. So we're now getting into social retirement funds, of government funds. We're also going to manage better those funds that are managed and run by private sector, the old mutuals and them, so that we actually redefine the rules and get them properly functioning, because currently they have many, many problems. Not that they are insurmountable and not that they are caused by them. There are loopholes everywhere. The last one that we need to deal with is actually looking at other funds like your RAF, UIF, COIDA, the NHI. NHI is part of this thing. It's part of the comprehensive social security program. So we shouldn't look at it in isolation. We are revamping that whole area of work so that come the future, we don't have people who have been suffering through sicknesses and illnesses that could not be treated and that could not actually eat properly, that could not because they are poor. So it's a way of saving to reduce poverty long term and over time. Thank you.
I think that should be maybe one area that we should also look at setting aside our morning for presentation. Whether we can find space now or early next year in terms of our program, I think that will go a long way in terms of also getting some input from what we think as parliamentarians and just reflect on all these changes, because you're right, I think what is exciting is that whilst we are in Parliament, the whole system is being overhauled. So being part of this process, I think, is quite historical.
To just say, I think someone in one of the members in one of our plenaries also raised the issue of taking it back to the schools. When we were all at school, we used to save. And to bring back that culture of saving right back to children, to just start that whole process, and I think it's an excellent idea. Thanks, Chief.
Just a comment, and you must help me if I'm wrong. One area that I'm very worried about, especially where savings are concerned, is the building industry. You know what I've noticed? That those people, they I don't know, they need to buy a stamp to get something at the end of the year. But every year, I was told that every year, if they start afresh, they start at zero with everything, especially contributions. And we really need to look at that area. I know this is relates to labor now. But I'm worried because people in the building trade suffer severe weather conditions, and some of them, their lifespan are quite short. And eventually those people... And it is really, it's a pity to see that some of those people, being good masons or whatever, eventually land up having nothing, really nothing, and not even qualifying at the age when they get disabled for a pension or a disability grant. So we really need to look at that area, because it is not the workers or the employees that benefit, but it is the employers that benefit all the way. And that is a matter of great concern to me.
I think the benefit that we're going to see as a country is that you're going to look at, there's going to be less pressure on the state, so it will free up more money for development, but that we will cover, the people will be protected from vulnerability, especially at that age when your masons and your carpenters, when they are 49, 50, they injure their backs, or, and then they can't work anymore, and they then live in poverty from having a stable income and now become poor and end up in extreme poverty. And then they have to wait, the elders have to wait until 65, at least now, when they're 60, they can then access government old age pension. But if they have a make a contribution from the time they start working, and when they become disabled, I'm sure they will have a fighting chance in having a decent life. And I think that will also go for your domestic workers and all your other sectors where workers are extremely vulnerable in terms of those pension funds.
No, certainly you're right, Chair. That's why I'm saying every working person. But because we don't want to also, because we're not a welfare state, even though people argue sometimes throw words like we're a welfare state, we're not. Because of that, we recognize that we cannot be able to, at this point in time, cater for those who are unemployed. There are many unemployed people who will need to contribute to the scheme as well, will need to save for the future as well, but the problem is that they're unemployed. So we are finding other mechanisms. Currently, we are just thinking through various other means as to how we can, including the Brazilian mechanism of getting them to maintain all schools in South Africa, all clinics in South Africa, all whatever, that they can get a job of about a 3-day a week, and then it can get them into some kind of back into the loop. These are the kinds of things that we're trying to put together so that they too can come in. You're right, very right. It will help a lot in vulnerability. Long term, South Africa will definitely look different, all things being equal, if this thing is implemented in its totality as comprehensive social security. Because, we're looking at COIDA. COIDA is about the accidents. We're looking at, we may actually have to do something about COIDA, because currently people do double dipping. They claim in COIDA, they claim in RAF, which is your motor vehicle. This thing, COIDA is accident on duty. That's your what is that thing? Compensation fund. They claim there. They claim in RAF. They claim also in something else. They may claim in NHI, but part of these things that have to do with health, we may have to locate within NHI, all of them, and then leave others differently. UIF. Currently, people who are 35 who are dismissed from the work or retrenched, they get they used to get payments up to 6 months. Minister has made an announcement, he has already brought one change. It goes up to 12 months. It's still not enough. After 12 months, you are just 36. It means that if all your money is gone, you then have to wait for 60 years to get into the social assistance of government. So again, UIF, we are looking at it differently. And what is UIF? UIF is only contribution from the private sector. So no one gets contribution from government for being on UIF. But it's got also its own little things, which we are again revamping in this process of. So it's a committee of ministries of about 7 or 8 ministers who are dealing with this matter. I say we'll bring it back to yourself.
While we're on that point, I think if I remember correctly, in Brazil they have a top up to your salary. And I've experienced many times that people do get, say, for instance, they get 2,000. They actually need 2,500 to get through the month. They just need that little top up percentage to carry them through the month, you know. So in Brazil, I think I heard correctly, or I remember correctly, because this was already 3 months ago, that they apply the top up to your salary for a couple of years or for a couple of months to just get you through. I know in Germany, if I'm correct, they, once you lose your job, once you become unemployed, they put you in a school of skills that you can better yourself or get qualify yourself in a new position for 18 to 2 years. Once you for that period, only for that period, the government will supply you with everything, with food for your family, school fees. If your fridge broke down, they'll supply a new fridge, school clothes and everything, but only for that period of 18 months to 2 years. After that, once you qualify, you must go out and spend it for your family and for your family yourself. So we just need to look at something that can add on to or get people just
level the thing, you know, or out of this situation into a new situation where they can fend for themselves.
I think that is that's a discussion we're going to have. The minister can brief us on all those new initiatives and just getting, because we it's interesting to know how the integration of government services is going to benefit, especially our most vulnerable people. Honourable members, the presentation for adoption is here. Can we break for 2 minutes? Just for you to grab something to eat or a cup of coffee or anything, and then we'll start with the adoption presentation, and then we'll come back to our program. But it seems as if members are in a conversational mood this morning. So the minutes they
It was emailed, I've got evidence, it was
emailed.
On the 15th, I've only got page one. I've only got page one there in my back of my folder.
Okay.
But, we are for 3 representatives from each committee. But if there's more that's going to come, we'll keep up the
Okay.
Some complaints that we still don't have the registers running properly. It's not this particular one of adoptions, but it was about the abused children. Between ourselves and justice. We'll talk about this particular register. It's one of the many things that we have to do at the same time as part of implementing the Children's Act together with justice. Chair, thank you very much. I would like now to, through you, ask Dr. Mavi to speak to the policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, everybody. What I'm going to do is to take you through the adoption policy framework and strategy. As the Honourable Minister, you know, has alluded upon, this policy framework and strategy has gone through certain approval, you know, structures within the department. It has gone through MINMAC and it came here, and then from here, as she said, you know, we are inviting comments in terms of how can we improve it before we take it, you know, to the next level, being the cabinet. The overview of the presentation will cover the purpose, you know, of the presentation, the purpose, the process of developing the strategy. It will entail how did we go about, you know, in developing the strategy. It will touch base on the problem statement, the methodology, the policy context, the current adoption practices, the situational analysis, the patterns, you know, of adoption in South Africa, the characteristics of children who are adopted, the types of alternative care, because we have various alternative care. So it will give you an idea, you know, of what are those various, you know, alternative care and their characteristics. And the new opportunities, you know, that this strategy brings, the strategic, you know, perspective, touching based on the vision, objective, and strategic actions, and also touching on the barriers to adoption, the MNE, how are we going to monitor and evaluate the implementation of this. It will also touch based on the policy recommendation because it has some, you know, implications in terms of policy. The costing model is also there, recommendation and action plan. In terms of the context, you know, of the policy framework, these are the chapters that will be highlighted in the strategy. Chapter 1 talks about the historical background of the adoption in South Africa, the policy context, you know, as alluded upon. So basically, it touches base, you know, on the previous slide. The purpose, you know, of this strategic plan or the strategic adoption strategic framework is to provide feedback on the progress made in relation to the development, you know, of the adoption policy framework and to request approval, you know, of the adoption policy framework and strategy so that you can take it to the next level. The problem statement. Adoption as a placement option has been widely underutilized in South Africa due to the following reasons. Most children are being placed in foster care, which is a temporary placement. So foster care is a temporary placement, it's not a permanent one. Rather than being permanently placed in adoption. So adoption is a permanent placement of children. Again, there are barriers that prevent people from adopting children, such as sociocultural obstacles, the service provider obstacles, and there is also a lack of financial support, you know, towards adoptive parents. When we compare, you know, foster parents with adoptive parents, we know that the foster parents are receiving, you know, some grants, you know, from the government. But here there is a lack of financial support towards the adoptive families and adopted children, and especially those with special needs. So that covers, you know, the problem statement, you know, of the strategy. The methodology. The policy framework and strategy consist of document and literature review. We derived information from reviewing, you know, whatever documents that we had, which was aimed at understanding various frameworks, mechanisms, and the context that could facilitate or inhibit the uptake of adoption in South Africa, as well as the strategies that could be implemented to increase the number of prospective adoptive parents. Because here then, we encourage people, you know, to be adoptive parents. So we want to increase, you know, the pool of prospective adoptive parents. Again, furthermore, analysis of secondary data from the National Adoption Register was further reviewed to establish the level and the trends of adoption, as well as compile a brief socio-demographic profile of adoptive parents and adopted children. Here, what I can say, the department is managing, or the directorate adoption, I'm managing the adoption register, whereby we keep, you know, the statistics relating to the adopted children and also the prospective, the adoptive parents, and also the origin, you know, the natural parents, so that if they want to trace their adopted children, they could, you know, contact us, and having looked at the adoption register, we can give them, you know, information. But that, you know, is in line with what is entailed in the Children's Act, because there are restrictions and there are, you know, adherence that we need, you know, to abide with. Furthermore, the policy framework and strategy incorporates the findings and the recommendations of the research undertaken by the Human Science Research Council. There was a research commissioned towards the Human Science Research Council. So this strategy incorporates the findings and recommendations that came up, you know, from that research that was commissioned. The policy context, we look at the legislation, we looked at the Constitution, the Children's Act that has been implemented, the White Paper on Social Welfare, the National Policy Framework and Strategic Plan for the Prevention and Management of Child Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation. Furthermore, we also looked at the global and regional commitments that South Africa has entered into, that is the international instruments, the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child, the African Common Position on the Child, the Hague Convention on Intercountry, and the African Charter, you know, on the rights and welfare of the child. Here now we are looking at the situational analysis. Here we are seeing the estimated number of children under the age of 18 is approximately 18 million. Here we'll also be, you know, updated by the statistics, you know, that the state South Africa will be, you know, doing next year. So the figure, you know, for now, as per, you know, 2007, stands at 18.8 million. And here we are giving, you know, the breakdown, you know, of children between 0 and 4 years. We say they are amounting to 28%, you know, of the child population. The estimated number of adoptable children can be gleaned, you know, from recent statistics of children in foster care, as well as those who are being deprived, you know, of parental care, including the orphans, children living and working on the streets, the child-headed households, and those who are in residential, you know, residential care. The street children are also another category of children who are being, you know, deprived of parental care. However, due to their unpredictable lifestyle, it is often difficult to collect, you know, reliable information or data. Although the statistics show that the number of children that are in need of parental care might be available for adoption, the data is not sufficient. That is why we commissioned, you know, the research that was conducted by the HSRC.
So may I say that that bullet, if we could stick to the right terminology, we call them children living and working in the streets. Mm. It's shortened so that in our minds we keep it that way.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. This slide talk about, you know, the estimated number of adoptable children. It gives the estimated number of orphaned children as per, you know, the figure of 2007. It was at 668,000. The following columns talks about the estimated of children living, you know, in child-headed households is, you know, recorded as 150,000. And the other figure looks at, you know, the estimated number of children in state-owned children's homes, you know, as of the end of October 2009, they were amounting to 14,599. And the last column talked about the number of children in foster care as of March 2010. They are at 510,766 children who are receiving foster care grant, who are being placed, you know, in foster placement. But as I say, that was, you know, as of March, you know, 2010. Sorry. Yeah. So this table gives the number of children adopted. We can have, you know, that figure, the previous figure of 510, and we compare that, you know, with the number of adopted children annually. So here we have broken down the two programs that we have. A managing adoption program, but under adoption program, there is a national program called domestic adoption, and the other leg is called inter-country adoption. Inter-country adoption is adoption happening, you know, within, you know, two countries. So these figures, you know, are showing, you know, the reflection of children, you know, adopted in South Africa. As way back as 2005, the total figure was 2.8, and in 2006 it was 2.7. But averagely, you could see that, you know, the total is about, you know, 2,000, which is, you know, a small amount as compared to children who are being placed in foster care. This slide talks about the pattern of adoption. Firstly, we talk about the national adoption by cross-cultural, you know, information that we have. The National Adoption Register shows that the majority of national adoption in the recent years took place within the same culture or the same racial group. Within inter-country adoption, this pattern may be a reflection of the department's policy that prioritizes adoption of children within their communities first and within their country of origin, that is South Africa. There is no legal barrier, you know, to transracial or cross-cultural adoptions in South Africa in terms of the Children's Act. The national adoption by family type, the data from the National Adoption Register shows that in recent years, the most popular type of adoption was step adoption, followed by foster adoption. This foster adoption is whereby we place, you know, children in foster care, but at the end, you know, the foster parents decide to adopt these children. So we classify, you know, that type of adoption as foster adoption. The step adoption is whereby, you know, the lady is having a child before the marriage, and the new husband, you know, marries her, and the new husband needs to adopt the child so that the child can be his biological child. So we classify, you know, that, you know, as a step adoption. Furthermore, under national adoption, in terms of the characteristics of adoptive parents, it is noted that single adoptive parents were in the highest as compared to married couples to adopt children, that is between 2004 and 2007. But however, the trend seemed to have changed or reversed, you know, in subsequent years, that is 2008 to 2009. This graph, you know, gives an indication of national adoption by cross-cultural information. The orange one, you know, talks about the same culture. In the previous slide, you talk about the same culture, you know, people preferring to adopt children of the same culture. So it gives an indication of how, you know, cross-cultural, you know, characteristics are being viewed, you know, by adoptive parents here. This slide talks about the characteristics of adopted children. And it varies, you know, or it is being, you know, categorized into age and gender and race. In terms of age, it has been, you know, generally found that the likelihood of being adopted decreases with age. So in most people, you know, in most cases, you know, the younger the child, the more likelihood that that particular child would be adopted. Additionally, the cost of adoption becomes a major concern when families consider adoption of older children, because adolescents generally have expensive desires and needs. This is evident in South Africa, where the study revealed that the overwhelming majority of prospective parents prefer babies. So, you know, as alluded upon, you know, people prefer babies, and it goes along, you know, with the secrecy factor, so that, you know, the smaller the baby, you know, the secret, you know, the parents will have, you know, over him. But, you know, with our intervention, social work intervention, we want to break through that secrecy, you know, kind of thing. Because, you know, if you are adopted, definitely you are adopted, the parents need to be upfront, you know, with the realities. And as you grow up, you know, as a child, they need, you know, to communicate and, you know, share the information about the realities, you know, of the matter. The other characteristic is gender. With regard to gender, a number of studies, you know, from the Western country have noted that a strong preference towards adopting, you know, there was a trend, you know, in adopting, you know, the girl child. Several theories attempts to explain this notion that girls may be easier to raise, I'm not sure, because they are less aggressive and more submissive. You know, that is a, you know, question mark that we can, you know, debate. In the case of inter-country adoption, girls may be able, you know, to assimilate into receiving society in the, you know, sending country, in the receiving countries more easily than their male counterparts. The study further revealed that South Africans do not seem to have a clear gender preference. Here in South Africa, we don't, you know, prefer with regards to adoptable children. Rather, you know, the overall experience is that, you know, gender is not usually the deciding factor. As long as the baby is healthy, the adoptive parents, you know, are more often satisfied with what they have. In terms of race, in South Africa, African, Indian and colored children are less likely to be adopted than white children.
Sorry, what happened here? Is it here? Sorry.
Yeah, here, okay. Yeah, as I say, you know, in South Africa, the Indian colored community are less likely, you know, their children, you know, are less likely to be adopted than the whites, even though the large majority of children who are orphaned, who are being abandoned, or who are in alternative care, in foster care, in children's home, are more of African, you know, origin. A relatively low level of adoption among Indians may reflect the fact that with a very close circle of family bonding and boundaries, Indians would find adoption very challenging because by its nature, it, you know, introduced someone from the, you know, outside, you know, the family. The white South African may be more comfortable adopting transracially. The racial pattern is reversed when the data for inter-country adoptions are analyzed, whereby the majority of African children make up the bulk, you know, of inter-country adoption in recent years, you know, with the colored one, the whites, you know, follow, and the Indians one. In inter-country, you know, adopters, it is almost, you know, they have limited, you know, choices in terms of the race of their prospective adoptive, you know, children. Here, this slide talks about the national adoption by family type. We classify that as biological adoption, family adoption, foster adoption, and step adoption. As you know, I've alluded upon, you know, with the step and foster. The biological adoption of a child by his biological father, who was not married to the child's mother when the child was born. So we classify that, you know, as biological adoption. Furthermore, family adoption is when adoption takes place, you know, within the family by a relative, by an uncle, by an aunt, by a grandparent. And the foster parent, you know, adoption here, we have talked about it earlier on, and also, you know, step adoption. Here, we give, you know, the trend, you know, of those family type adoption. You know, we can see that the step adoption, you know, is consistent, you know, in most cases. So this, you know, I wanted, you know, to give you, you know, a reflection of, you know, the trends and development in terms of the family adoption. And here there is a category in the adoption register where we talked about, you know, the legitimacy. The abandonment, you know, of the child is whereby, you know, the children who are given up by their parents and parents cannot be traced, and children who are left at hospitals, you know, at streets by their parents. So we classify them, you know, as abandoned, you know, children. Furthermore, we also talk about the children born out of wedlock and children born within, you know, the marriage. Those are the classifications that we have, you know, in terms of the National Adoption Register. So here is a trend in terms of the previous slide. This slide talks about the pattern, you know, of adoption. Using the available information in the National Adoption Register, this section shows the various patterns of adoption in South Africa. As I said, you know, there is a component on inter-country adoption. Inter-country adoption have almost doubled up in the last 10 years, driven by changes, you know, in infertility and other demand and supply sectors. Many African countries have shown little interest in inter-country adoption, and the Hague Convention, that is the international instrument, you know, that we have, you know, signed or abiding with, in particular, because of its, you know, burden of supervision, administrative control, and the wide range of services that countries of origin need to provide to ensure successful placement. So in most cases, you know, African countries, you know, are not party to the Hague Convention. South Africa is one of the few African countries that have acceded to the Hague, and we have acceded, you know, by the 1st of December 2003. National adoptions are prioritized versus or over inter-country adoption. We want to emphasize, you know, national adoption. We want to recruit local prospective adoptive parents. You know, we don't want to send our kids, you know, abroad. we need to start, you know, popularizing the services, you know, in the country to make people aware of the services that we have nationally so that people could be keen in, you know, coming up to adopt children. You know, unlike, you know, we, you know, send out kids, you know, to outside our borders. The adoption register showed a steady but very small increase in inter-country adoption and the overwhelming large proportion of national adoption, which is good, which is what we want. But we want to do more in terms of increasing the number. Here is a breakdown of inter-country adoptions by, you know, cultural groups. And as I said, you know, it ranges as back as 2004. So we could see that, you know, the figures, you know, are low. You know, this is not a priority, but this is what we are also doing. We are also, you know, placing, you know, children on inter-country programs. And these are the receiving countries. It gives an indication for now that Germany is the, you know, number of kids, you know, are going to Germany. Yeah. So we need to recruit more to families, you know, to keep that, yeah. Local families to keep that. And who adopts? You know, this gives an indication of two categories, the married and the single. It gives an impression that more people who are adopting are single people. So we need to check as to why married people, you know, are not. And we encourage, you know, those married people, you know, that they need to adopt. This is a breakdown, you know, of racial group of the national program. As we have seen in the previous slide, the white, you know, category is the highest, you know, group that adopts. India is the least. We can see that, you know, it's the very least. It's the very least. So in terms of India, they are very least, but they are doing inter-country as the receiving country. South Africa is a receiving country, wanting to adopt specifically only from India, not from any other world, you know, country, because of the close boundaries of, you know, the Indian culture. Yeah. Mm. So if they don't have children, rather they would say, okay, fine, do you have working agreements with India? If yes, can we check as, you know, whether are they kids in India that we can, you know, place children with. Okay, this slide gives an indication or it gives an explanation on the type of alternative care and their characteristics. We talked about foster care. We said foster care is a short-term placement. It's a temporary placement. And children are not permanent, as I said. And they age out when they reach 18 years. They reach out when they age, you know, 18 years. And adoption, that is the second one, is a permanent placement. You belong to that family. You acquire, you know, the surname of that family. And that is a lifetime, you know, issue. The child belongs to a family. And this is what we need, you know, to encourage, to say, these abandoned, you know, children who are, you know, working and living on the streets, the children who are, you know, classified as child-headed households, they need to belong. So we need, you know, to place them, you know, in permanent placement. The last one is called residential care. Residential care is a, you know, a short-term placement. Most cases is the children's home, the normal children's home. The children are being kept there up until the age of 18. When they reach 18, what is happening to them? You know, they age out, they go out, you know, out of, you know, the facilities. And some of them land up again, you know, in the streets because they don't have a family to belong. But rather we say, then let people come and, you know, adopt these children who are in residential facilities so that they can be offered permanent, you know, placement. And the kids would know that definitely there is a home to belong. The research that we have commissioned to HSRC gave us indication on various barriers, things that prohibit you know, people from adopting. Types of barriers identified, you know, are service provider obstacles. So under service provider obstacles, they looked at, you know, the legal and judicial system. In most cases, people say, you know, the process is a lengthy one. It starts, you know, by contacting the clerk of court. The clerk of court needs to make appointments so that, you know, the magistrate can sit and hear there, you know, the case. The resource allocation obstacle, the knowledge base obstacle, and the social cultural obstacle. As we go along, it will be deliberated, you know, in depth. The strategic perspective of this framework and the strategy is to provide a stable and permanent home for children who are acquiring or who are, you know, requiring alternative care. So this is the vision, the provision of a stable and permanent home for children requiring alternative care. We talked about the new opportunities. We need to come up, you know, what will the strategy bring, you know, as new things as compared, you know, the as is, you know, things that have been happening. We say the new things, flexibility in terms of legal process for adoption. We are in negotiation, you know, we are in engagement with the Department of Justice in terms of how can we, you know, speed up, you know, processes in terms of the cases. Permanency planning for children who are adoptable. More children are in foster care. That is the current affair because of certain things. So we say we need to move away from foster care, but more money, as you can see, is one of the reasons. We need to move from that, you know, perspective to permanency planning of children who are adoptable. The current practice as is adoption has been practiced, you know, as a private, you know, a matter, not being practiced by all government social workers. It has been, you know, practiced, you know, as an elite practice, you know, by NGOs and also by private practitioners. But now the Children's Act say government needs to be involved. Government social workers need to be involved. So we are, you know, capacitating the government social workers so that they can, you know, facilitate the adoption process. So government involvement in the rendering of adoption services. Adoption agencies not accredited by the Council for Social Service Professions. Previously, the adoption practitioners, you know, were being accredited, you know, by the council, but now the department, you know, has been legislated, you know, to accredit service providers to undertake adoption services. Lack of prospective adoptive parents and adoptable children. You know, we didn't have a pool of prospective adoptive parents. The practitioners, private practitioners, have been doing, you know, their own things in little corners, you know, without proper management or proper M&E in terms of, you know, the processes. But now, the new Children's Act brought, you know, remedy to this, whereby the register, RECAT is the register on adoptable children and adoptive prospective parents. So we keep a register of how many children are adoptable and how many, you know, prospective parents do we have so that we can match, you know, the two and facilitate, you know, the process. There have been, you know, an ad hoc promotion of adoption services. So, you know, as a new opportunity, there is a coordinated promotion of adoption services. So the strategy is bring more opportunities, you know, as of, you know, the previous endeavors. The objective of the strategy, the overall objective of the strategy is to promote adoption as a preferred form of permanent placement. And this could be achieved, you know, by taking the opportunities presented by the Children's Act in promoting adoption, by minimizing the barriers, you know, by minimizing the problems that are being encountered, you know, through providing adequate technical human resources to support adoption services and to enable effective service delivery in adoption. It also can be achieved by improving resource allocation and improving the knowledge base of communities and service providers on adoption. It also touches on improving the understanding of, you know, socio-cultural beliefs and practices of adoption. Here we are, you know, unpacking the first objective, popularizing. How can we popularize that? We can popularize it by managing the register that I've talked about, the register on adoptable children, to say how many children do we have, you know, that can be adoptable, how many prospective, you know, parents. Furthermore, we can also look at the post-adoption agreement, promoting open adoption, freeing orders that are being brought by, you know, the Children's Act, family reunification and permanency planning, defining, you know, the adoptable children and identification of adoptable children in the children's home. As I said, those could be a pool that we can use, identifying those children that can be adoptable. That is objective one. Objective two, we talk about minimizing, you know, the barriers, the impediments through providing technical support, human resources in terms of facilitating. This includes both intra-organizational, inter-system, and personal obstacles in direct service, you know, delivery, such as, you know, child welfare and legal system. We have seen that, you know, there are bottlenecks, you know, that are being, you know, encountered, you know, with the child protection organization and also the legal system. So here we need to minimize, you know, the problems that are being encountered so that we can encourage. People shouldn't be discouraged, people shouldn't be demotivated, you know, but by what they are being, you know, served, you know, as those particular officers. Providing technical, you know, adequate technical and human resources to support adoption services, building capacity of service providers. As we speak now, we are going, you know, in all provinces, you know, capacitating the government social workers because they have been, you know, lagging behind in terms of adoption services. And by doing so, we are, you know, equipping them with the skills, you know, in terms of consistency, in terms of uniformity in the interpretation and implementation of the child care legislation. The third objective talks about improve, you know, resource allocation. This relates, you know, to common and chronic lack of specialized services to address special needs of adopted, you know, children and their families. Insufficient resources in many communities to finance their program development or to sustain them, you know, over time. The fourth objective talks about improving the knowledge base of communities and service providers in terms of, you know, adoption services. A widespread of lack of knowledge and understanding regarding the unique dynamic of adoption, the typical issues confronting adopted children and their families, the risk factors that undermine adoption, and the factors that stabilize, strengthen, and preserve adoptive families. As I've alluded upon, some of the things here, you know, are secrecy. Some of the things here are, you know, people not coming up, you know, clearly to disclose, you know, the status or the current, you know, affairs, you know, of what is happening to their kids. Rather, their kids will hear from the neighbors that, you know, your eyes are blue, but, you know, your mother's eyes are not blue. So definitely you are not the biological child, you know, of that. You know, a child hearing, you know, from outside about, you know, what his status is. Raising awareness, promoting and marketing of adoptions, you know, as a preferred option. This includes appropriate outreach, marketing, public relations, and community outreach programs to make information on adoption readily available to the communities. Shortage of prospective adoptive parents, especially from African communities, Adoption as a form of permanent, you know, alternative care has not received wide promotion. Recruitment, you know, of adoptive parents has been currently being carried out, you know, on a ad-hoc basis, you know, by various stakeholders. Objective 5, you know, continues, talks about still focusing on the traditional beliefs and cultural understanding of permanency. Because here you will be introducing, you know, a new member to the family. So we need to respect and abide with the tradition, maybe, you know, by doing amasozi, you know, requesting the ancestors, you know, to welcome, you know, the new member, you know, of, you know, to the family. So we need to encourage, even if, you know, the belief system are rigid, but, you know, try to work around that rigid, you know, belief system in terms of introducing this new person into the family. Because that is a fact. In most cases, people will say, no, our ancestors, you know, don't believe in taking an outsider, you know, to take the new, you know, our surname. Yeah, as I said earlier on, we have policy recommendation. And the first one here relates to grants, you know, adoption grants. It is noted from the research that people are in favor of an adoption grant, in that this will enable more people to adopt, and would, you know, it will alleviate, you know, the pressure, you know, that the foster care system.
You have 5 minutes.
So it will, you know, alleviate the pressure, you know, on the foster care system. Furthermore, the government needs to have more, you know, some way of ensuring that the needs of children are met, and grant will go some way towards doing that. Furthermore, unless the monitoring, renewal, and aftercare services that accompany foster care are made applicable to adopted children, the non-grant costs, you know. So we can say, you know, here we are proposing that, you know, adoption grant would be given, you know, to prospective, or can be, you know, a guarantee to parents who are willing, you know, to adopt. This action would impact on the present number of adoption in foster care. Foster care can continue to be utilized as an interim arrangement, as a temporary, as was originally envisioned. But a policy and strategy can be developed to manage the transition from foster care to adoption. And here, it touches around cultural sensitivity, you know, on adoption. You know, bring those, you know, cultural, you know, dynamics, the ancestral, you know, consultation with, you know, traditional leaders to guide the development of the system, where the African rituals and practices are incorporated, where culturally sensitive approaches to naming and renaming of children could be utilized. Here we have costed, you know, the strategy. And here is a cost, you know, of the register, amounting to 729. And here we have costed the communication strategy. And here we have costed the manpower in the provinces. By the way, this has gone through, you know, the management approval, you know, of certain structures. It went to HSD, they have approved that, they are aware of that, that they need, you know, to put aside allocation for cost, you know, costed resources that need to be put, you know, in provinces. And here we have costed, you know, the adoption grant to say averagely, because the children adopted are plus minus, you know, 2.5, and we have amounted the adoption grant to be equal to the foster care grant. So these are the figures that we have put to say, you know, bearing in mind that we have recommended that in the first year, this is the amount, in the second year, this is an amount, in the third year, this is an amount, you know, of the adoption grant. And here is an action plan, and some of the things we have already started, you know, doing, you are on top of that, the media awareness, community dialogues, we have, you know, started doing that. And yeah, and this is going to be a phased-in approach in terms of implementing this plan. And lastly, it is recommended that, you know, this committee, the portfolio committee, takes no cognizance of the context, note the approved strategic plan, and also the cost implication, because it carries, you know, a lot of weight in terms of money issue. Thank you, Chair. Sorry to have taken your time.
So thank you, Dr. Mabe. Thank you, Minister. Members, any questions and comments and clarity? We'll take everything at once. Honorable Member Magagula, Honorable Member Makuba, any other members of Ola and Amula? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think it sounds good and it sounds interesting. But I just want to ask a small question about the biological adoption. To me, before you said no, it seems as if the Africans here in South Africa are not the people who adopt more people. But when you check the biological adoption, it's only that it's not registered proper. But we have many families who adopt the way that you put biologically adoption. Because also I don't understand that, because I think the child must be adopted by the family. But now this biological adoption, it means that a single parent, a parent within the family must adopt. And to me, it doesn't just come clear about this, only the adoption, the biological adoption.
I think we can just stop the moment, note all the questions, and then respond to them. But I just want to link up with Vincent, Honorable Member Magakuna's question around parental rights and the biological adoption. If you can explain to me the difference. Because in this case it will be when the single, when the father marries the mother.
Mm-hmm.
The biological father marries the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because the child is considered out of wedlock when the two parents are not married.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what you've described to us. This is a biological adoption. When the two parents get married, the father needs to adopt the child. But also when, and then it's a step adoption issue. But what I would like to know is, what is the difference in the parental rights and the rights of the child before adoption, before biological adoption? Is there a difference? Why does a father need to adopt his own child?
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, members. I'd like to thank the presentation. Thank you very much, sir, for the presentation that you gave to us now on the adoption policy framework and strategy. I know when we talk about adoption as an African, I always have a lot of questions in my mind, because before, as in Africa, we never used to have these big numbers of orphans. Like, what I want to say is, there was a say that said, there's no orphan when there's family. We used to have that. And I do not know what happened. Is it because we adopted the European styles of living, that where we now say my family is myself, my husband, and my children, and nobody else? Because, you know, I'm just looking at the number of orphans. If it's 668,000, and only 14,000 have been adopted in like 5 years, that is too little. I'm thinking maybe, is it not because, like Honorable Magagula was saying, that maybe some of these are not really registered with the department? Because I know amongst black families, a lot of black families are still doing that, are still continuing. If my sister dies, I take over her kids, and I maintain I make sure they get raised. I know there are instances where that no longer happens. And but has it gone so big? And I think the new opportunities, I would like to welcome them, because what we learned again was that amongst the black communities, you'll hear people saying they don't want to go and adopt because it's a long process and it drags, and they get so attached sometimes to the kids and all that when the process is going. I don't know what happened during the process, but they find that in the end they don't get the child, they are disillusioned, so people are scared to go back to the offices again and adopt. So I'm saying with the new opportunities, maybe like the doctor was saying to us that they've introduced a lot of flexibility to the process. Maybe that will encourage a lot of people to come in and adopt children. And I just want to say a question on the adoption versus foster parenting. If we are saying we're going to improve, as a department, the department is going to improve resource allocation, like come up with an adoption grant, I don't know, I'm a bit scared that people are not now going to adopt kids for adopting kids for the sake of loving to have a child, but they're going to start maybe doing it for money. It's just a concern that I have. And on objective 5 of the presentation, finally, I would like to wish the department good luck, because I do not see a Mr. Mdletshe in KZN adopting an Indian or a colored child and actually bringing him in, as the doctor was saying, to speak to Amadlozi and say, we now have a child, and the child is not the color of it. I just hope we'll get to that one day, but good luck.
Honorable Member Lamula.
Thank you, Chair. Very interesting presentation. Extremely interesting. And I think we really needed this beforehand, and we need more time to scrutinize certain issues here, because we really need to also bear in mind that we have certain acts in place, and we need to see how this fits and matches the acts. My first question then is only, and I'll be very brief, on at some page 25, types of barriers identified. Now that the barriers are identified, what is the department's suggestion on the service provider obstacles? Any strategy? Is there any strategy that you're working on, or is any strategy in place? And then the other question is, stepchildren, and we find that many times, even when a mother gets married to the father, at times when things get hot or when things heat up in the home, children are always dragged into it. And, you know, is there any, there's nothing that covers that stepchild. Is there any grant? Does that stepchild qualify for any grant? The other one is on page 9. Estimated number of children in state-owned homes, 14,599. And I had to do with this. I spoke to the Honourable Minister on this one. NGOs not receiving their governmental subsidies. And, you know, it was heartbreaking to know that in one of our provinces, it was also orphanages that were included in institutions not receiving their grants. And this is completely against our Children's Act. I know they also need to raise private funds. The blame is put onto the new NPO Act, and I would like to know then who needs to identify this to the NGOs and at least alert them to what they need to do. Perhaps it's a general one, and not so much, but it really matches the children, the presentation too. And then something that has really been bothering me for very, very long, and I have to do with this, I can say on a regular basis, children with special needs, Minister. Since the age of birth until 18, they do not qualify if their parents' salary exceeds the means test. But children over 18, no matter who their
parents are, no matter what the income are. They are adults then, according to our law, qualify for this grant. Yet, those children while growing up from 1 to 18 years are also in need of very, very special services. And many times the mother also cannot work. To me, it seems to be it's a form of discrimination against those children. Though their parents, and you must really help me here, though their parents do receive a bigger salary, do they not qualify? Because many of them that I deal with are physically disabled for life, yet they cannot receive a grant unless they get into an institution. Then I don't even know if the institution receives any grant. Just for clarity's sake, I always grapple with this question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I think time is jealous. I think we could have just said one item on this presentation, because as it's for the first time we hear this thing of adoption, how it works and how it has been working. It's very interesting. But what I want to know, I hear doctor saying there will be a register so that when the biological mother wants to trace the child, he must know where, or she must know where the child is. So what I don't understand is that you take a child being 3 months and you raise her or him up. When the child reaches 18 years, he is the mother. How is the government going to protect the person who has raised this child? And does this a register going to be used outside the country for our government in South Africa to trace those children, to put them under government inspection or whatever? And then I just want to know criteria used to place children on outside country adoption. And then the other thing is, when you go to our constituency office, with the shortage of social workers that we are having, you will see our social workers spending the whole day at court looking for the magistrate to come and sign those adoption papers. And I will come there, the legal procedure is too long and it should be shortened. And the one of transparency, I would add to say, only my neighbors will tell the child that you are adopted. Even the families can do that thing. So it's very important to emphasize that fact that transparency should exist between the adopted child and the parents. Thank you.
I think if Dr. Mahaba, if you can comment and close and open adoptions. And I think that will assist. What always helped is when the Department of Social Services have an arrangement with a magistrate that for one day in the week, like half the day, they will just concentrate on social services issues. So you will have like your mid-morning. Instead of having court, you will sit and, well, you'll have court, but then you will just give attention to social services matters. And that takes care of your foster care and your adoption proceedings. And so you turn over time in terms of your processing of foster care grants, and those other related issues. It really helps. So I think that is something that social development departments in other provinces should really look at. Just the issue of adoption agencies. From a personal point of view, in my family, we have quite a few children that have been adopted through the courts. But our families had to pay quite a lot of money. Going back 10 to 12 years, they had to pay R3,500 per child for adoption to these NGOs. And I'm very glad to hear that the cost, I think you mentioned that the cost of adoption has been brought down, because that is a deterrent, really. Because most of the time, prospective parents doesn't have that kind of money. But I think the good side also of adoption, especially when you are adopting a family child, because you could have the instance where the biological parents would come and threaten the adoptive parents, or the parents that is in custody of the child. So when you have adopted that child, it actually gives you more rights to protect you from blackmail and exploitation, because people can be manipulative emotionally around that. But I think the comment around being very honest with children from an early age around the adoption without stigmatizing them, I think by being open about adoption, you're actually destigmatizing adoption. And you'll be amazed how children really accept that, because they repeat that to themselves. And it doesn't become a stigma or a cruel joke. But if the black community in South Africa can be more open to adoption, we'll have less childhood households. Just in one township, you'll find over 100 childhood households in black townships. And if we can open our hearts more in our homes, I'm sure we can make an impact in lessening the impact of childhood households. Dr. Mabe, over to you, and then Honorable.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the questions and comments made by the Honorable Members.
That just reminded me that Honorable Member Masilo and Gome had their hands up. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a comment, just to check, because the Children's Act has been passed in 2006. Now, in terms of outreach program of awareness, what program do we have on the outreach program, whether with the NGOs, church organization, and CBOs, because we are aware that we have to adopt, but we don't have more information in terms of our constituencies and other areas. So how are we going to know about this good program you are having? For instance, in my church I'm attending currently, we've got this program of learners, adopt a parent, where we assist in educational matters. But this one of the adoption, legal adoption, but we know about the foster care, because we know foster care grant is more than other grants. For instance, child support grant is lesser than foster care. So most people go for foster care than other grants and adoption. So if maybe can the department assist us about the outreach program, so that we as a public rights, we could also take their program forward. Thank you.
Thank you. This committee, once we get talking, we don't stop. Including the chair. Honorable Mpose, do you have a word? You're fine. Come on.
Thank you very much, Chair. To me, it's as if adoption is better than this first decade. I'm reading something here. We've been experiencing many problems, Doctor and Honorable Minister, whereby the family will be getting the foster care grant. When you get in this family inside the room, you will see that the mother and father are having four children and have got four orphans. When you are looking at the difference between these children, they are beautiful, well-dressed, prepared to school, and these orphans who are getting this foster care grant are just pale. And I think it will give them a responsibility more than they have to say, this is my child. And another thing else, I just want you to dwell in the actual amount per child, or will I have to divide that to 2.5 by 20,000, something like that, I don't know. But just how much will it be for an adopted child per child, so that we can see. The grant, yes. Because really, the people who are fostering these children, in fact, are keeping these children, they are being threatened by the far families. The child is right when he's 18 or 20 and he's a teacher. He's my child. But when he was 3 months old, I couldn't take care of them. Then this program is going to assist and help them to say it is not your child, even if he is a teacher. Thank you. Thanks, Doctor.
Yeah, in terms of the figure, we have equated the proposal to be the same amount as foster care.
Okay.
To say if foster care is $680, let's, you know, take it, you know, as an offer, you know, to this side. Yeah. And in terms of the outreach programs, if we look at our action plan, we have, you know, costed our communication strategy. So our outreach, our awareness programs are there to go out to communities, to have community dialogues, to have community invisos in terms of, you know, making information available to our community. So that is entailed in our action plan. And it can go, you know, down, further down, you know, to organizations like churches. We are willing. We have provincial coordinators, we have provincial manpower, you know, who could assist us in, you know, unfolding, you know, the process. Yeah, peasant power. Okay. And then in terms of the adoption register, there is a section, you know, in the Children's Act, section 248, where it talks about the access of this register. Definitely, it talks about the restrictions, you know, in terms of who is having access, you know, to this information. And can the biological mother who has consented to give away the child, can she, you know, directly contact the child? No, not really. They need, you know, we need to get, you know, consent, permission, you know, in all parties that are involved.
Yeah.
But if there are no permission, if, you know, one party is not willing, you know, we leave it, you know, at that point. Because the child will say, yes, you are my biological mother, you gave me it, you know, for adoption, but now, you know, you want to know where am I. I've been there with the prospective parents, I'm okay, I'm comfortable, I don't want to hear anything about you. So we are the middlemen, you know, as a department, you know, in terms of monitoring that. If the answer is yes, yes, it will be yes. If the answer is no, no. And there are preparations that we make. Counseling. You know, we render counseling services in terms of, you know, we don't know whether will you be rejected by this child. You know, at times, you know, the child will, you know, give you, you know, his back to say, oh, okay, fine, but, you know, I don't want to hear anything about you. So there are preparations, you know, in terms of that. And then in terms of criteria on inter-country adoption, we have working agreements, you know, with various countries. So those working agreements are the determining, you know, criteria on choosing the partners that we work with. We don't work, you know, with all the countries that the Department of Foreign Affairs, you know, is working with. You know, we are working on manageable, you know, countries that we can, you know, work closely with. In terms of closed versus open adoption, closed adoption is in terms of where the biological mother, you know, doesn't want to know anything, you know, about where the child is going. You know, it's a closed case, it's a closed chapter. I don't want anything, you know, from here. Open is whereby we act as middlemen again, you know, in terms of communication. We enter into post adoption agreements, being in the middle. So that is the difference between closed and open adoption. Yeah, in terms of adoption agencies, the fees that are being regulated, they are being regulated, you know, by the regulations. They are clearly, you know, are stated there. In terms of the state-owned facilities, yes, the subsidy issue, there is a review, you know, by the department in terms of finance policy. So I think, you know, in terms of, you know, the process, after the review, there would be some recommendation and improvement in terms of, you know, subsidizing. Because according to the Children's Act, we say the statutory services need to be 100% subsidized, and which is not, you know, what is happening. So through the review, you know, of this financing policy, because currently we are, you know, litigated by Free State. Is it Free State? So it has pushed us, you know, to that point. So the department is on speed in terms of reviewing that, because it has, you know, deadlines, you know, to respond to such things. Yes, the means test, you know, of children with disabilities, the income of their parents, I think that could be covered, you know, by amendments, you know, in terms of social security. Is it social security? Yeah, it's social assistance.
Mm.
Is social assistance. So maybe we can make, you know, proposal in terms of amendment, so that, you know, the income of, you know, the parents cannot be misdirected. But as of now, you know, this is the situation. But we can send, you know, proposal in terms of amendments, you know, thereof. Types of barriers in terms of service provider. Yeah, in terms of service provider, we are looking at us as the department, the officials, the officers, the social workers. As I said earlier on, you know, the adoption services were more taken, you know, as elite, you know, services that are being rendered by private practitioners. But now, you know, the Children's Act is forcing, you know, government officials. So we are offering capacity, you know, building, information sharing, so that we can, you know, speed up, you know, the knowledge base of social workers who need, you know, to render these services to our communities. In terms of objective 5, yes, we need that good luck, you know, from our honorable member there. Yes, the process, as you know, I've alluded upon, you know, previously it was discouraging, it was demotivating, but as of now, you know, the new opportunities, I think we will be, you know, getting joy, you know, out of, you know, the whole process. The informal arrangement, yes, we Black, you know, we African, we are doing much, and we have been doing much, but these have been, you know, classified as informal arrangements. And this has, you know, consequences, you know, in terms of, you know, certain things. For example, I may raise, you know, my sister's, you know, children, okay? And that arrangement will not entitle them to get inheritance, you know, when I'm dead. You know, there were, you know, such cases 2 years ago whereby, you know, the child forfeited millions, you know, of rand, that if, you know, he was adopted, he could have acquired that.
Yeah.
So those are the benefits, you know, of adoption.
Yeah.
And then other things are housing, you know. I can raise, you know, my sister's, you know, child, okay, fine, come and stay, you know, with me. But when I die, you know, my kids are going, you know, to take him or her out of the out of the child, while they are all, you know, kids. You know, he belongs here. You know, he could have been legally. So those are the benefits, you know, minor benefits that have impact, you know, in terms of the status of the child. The biological. Okay, I've talked about informal adoption. The biological adoption versus the parental rights. Yes, the father would have the parental rights as according to the Children's Act. But he doesn't have those parental rights, you know, doesn't give him, you know, the legal responsibility, legal what? Legal determinants, you know, over the child. So above all, you know, if he wants the child, you know, to belong to him legally, he needs, you know, to so in a way, parental rights, you know, are not as confirmed, you know, as the adoption rights. That yeah. So those are the finer, you know, little dots, you know, that could separate, you know, the two. So I hope I've done justice, you know, to the question, Minister.
No,
On that biological parent, it's clear when if the parents get married after the child is born, right? That is still adopted and the father still adopts. Yeah. But if they don't get married, can the father still adopt? Yeah. Because he doesn't have rights. Although he doesn't have legal rights. Because they're not married.
The biological father.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Look, they're not married. Maintenance is paid. He has, and it's just the wording right, he has some kind of right, but he doesn't have another right. The mother has the right. So if he adopts, even though they're not married, can he still?
Not still.
Can he still adopt?
It can be adopt. If the mother is given consent to say, I'm giving consent to Abel to adopt this child. Mm. Yes, it can be adoption. It can be taken as adoption. Yeah. Mm.
It's been quite some interface for South Africa recent years, especially with the fact that we got a democratic constitution in terms of equality. So there's been quite a few cases, really, really interesting few case law that we can actually go to in terms of parental rights. Honourable members, I'm going to give over to the minister to conclude this presentation, and then I just want to make one proposal to you on the way forward. Thank you. Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much. Pardon me if I go a bit longer as well. It's a very important topic, as honourable members have indicated. And the first thing I would like to raise there is that it's outside this presentation. As we consider this policy and the strategy, and as it is considered by social development, we are going to require some discussion between us and Home Affairs. And naturally, I think the Portfolio Committee needs to do the same. In the new approaches by Home Affairs, remember Home Affairs policy and approach came earlier than this one. In the new approach by Home Affairs, there is a requirement that that's now the new approach of registration at birth. On a birth certificate, we need to have the names of both parents and the ID numbers of both parents. We did, as we spoke to this policy of Home Affairs and the new approach, make a point, and the Minister of Home Affairs also indicated, saying that there is going to be some bit of a challenge when you come to matters of this nature. They're quite sensitive. Some of them are quite private, and therefore they'll need to be handled with merit, every case with its own merit. Why? Because there may be a need to, at birth, register a child of this nature. Just last week, I got a call from somebody in Rustenburg that they were sitting in a yard and they had a child crying somewhere close by. And in the bush, as they went, they found a child covered with a black bag, almost being suffocated. And these are men. Naturally, they went, uncovered the child, and called the police and gave over the child to the social workers and to the police. It's a child whose name is not known. It's a child whose parents, both of them, are not known. That child has got to be given a name. It's got to be registered elsewhere. It's a case of that nature where, at birth and at registration, that child has got to have a certificate. Who are you going to write? So there are going to be complications of that nature. There are going to be complications of those women who get children out of rape or a process like
mm-hmm.
that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying that as we talk about this policy, adoption as well, much as it may have to be adoption, it has a lot more to do with that work. So we are mindful of this very glaring challenge, and I think we need to also deal with it. Secondly, there are going to be, well, let me just start by saying that we all know that culture is not static. Culture evolves with the time. Isn't it that we no longer, even though we're culturally inclined, we're no longer as deep culturally inclined as our great-great-grandfathers or mothers. So culture evolves with the time. And the African culture, and any other culture, by the way, as time goes on and as things evolve, there is definitely going to be some aspects of our lives that actually causes culture to evolve more and even more faster. And this one is a case in point. One may ask, why is it that Minister Mulewa, when you talk about the orphaned children, you talk about children who are somewhere in the tune of just over 2 million. And this adoption register has got a number that's lesser. It's those kinds of things. We're talking about maternal orphans and paternal orphans. And those are different. There are differences between those two. So the figures would differ. A child may be an orphan from a maternal orphan, but not quite an orphan, if you really, because the father is still alive, even if they know. So there are those who have lost both parents, so you'd count those figures. And those children may not necessarily be included in these figures here today. Some of whom may have actually been adopted in a manner that Honourable Member was talking about, that my child is your child the African way. My sister's child, if they've passed on, is my child. And we just bring them up. I mean, people in Free State in particular is Maine. Whenever I'm on radio talking about this thing of orphans and grants, they say, but why did you, government, bring in this thing that's called foster grant? You never spoke to us, especially some of us, because I am inclined to bring up my child, my sister's child, like my own child. So why did you come to propose a foster grant or something like that? When I am willing and able to do that. Those are some of the cases, but there are few cases. All we know is that there's got to be income support of some sort for those people who really require support and who are taking an extra burden. We know that the problem is no longer like previously. It's no longer like 50 years ago. It's no longer like 40 years ago. Then we had cattle. Then we had everything. Then we had wealth of some kind. Today, we no longer have those things. Sometimes it's a parent who's got to, a brother who's got to look after some 3-4 siblings of each of the 4 sisters, 12 children. So the burden has become a little bit more these days. So because of the patterns of change of life in our country and elsewhere. And therefore, this culture, the evolution of culture, also given the fact that I'm talking about evolution of culture because in the past, we never really required to register a child. It wasn't quite a very strict thing, if you like. Now we have to register a child. Now we've got to do the issues of inheritance and so on. I mean, one day, just recently, I had somebody saying, a call from one of the persons who have adopted a child. And because of our own delays in the department, this person was not able to acquire the formal adoption certificate. And he says, I want to register this child on the estate because they need to actually benefit. So those kinds of things, I mean, we never used to register quite so for estates. Now all those legal things have come into our lives. We've got to really try and move and evolve with this culture. And this is why one of the reasons why you would see us creating policies of this nature, which actually, in an African way, we maybe seem to be diverging from the original African culture when it's not. You look at the family policy, which we are currently writing. It has the same kinds of touches of something that people can call a diversion from this thing. A definition of family, yes, yeah. A definition of family. So I thought I should raise this these two matters before I just get quickly into issues of detail. The matter that I think we need to, well, the issue of cross-cultural issues, the Indian in particular, and I don't think we have done analysis of Chinese, because you would find more or less the same thing with the Chinese people as a nation. They would more or less have the same kind of culture. It's things that we think that will actually evolve with time. Again, cultural evolution will help us to deal with those things that, you know, Amadozi and so on tend this thing. But we're saying let's provide in the policy for that kind of eventuality so that we don't leave it behind. The matter of the NGOs not receiving grants, Chair, I would like us to really ask once again, I know that we're piling the agenda of the committee, but just to have a full-blown discussion on this matter, particular matter, because it keeps coming and coming. Perhaps we may also want to, at the ultimate end, request the portfolio committee to work very closely with the department in terms of some of the things that have to be done in terms of conscientization. Because mainly what we find as a problem, it's not quite a blame on the NGO Act, NPO Act, as Honorable Lamla say, but it's actually the requirement of that Act. By the way, that Act is an Act, one of the very first Acts that were written when the Democratic government came in. I looked at it, it was written in 1995, one of the very, very oldest ones when we came in. There are challenges with that Act. However, where there are legal obligations from the management and governance of the NPOs, we are just not able as a department to look away from those legal obligations. And the legal obligations are as follows. Submit your reports, let's say it says what, 3 months after the year ending, of how you spend your money, how you have done what, and everything else. Those things are detailed in the Act. The challenges I'm talking about is that once that Act, the submission of report happens within 3 months or after 3 months, it's already 3 months into the following year. And you have to look at those reports, scrutinize them, satisfy yourself that the governance issues are in place. And once you have satisfied yourself as a department, as a unit, you then, only then, have to actually do payment for the following year. Now, this satisfaction does not also just depend on a paper. You have to be sure that even the place exists, because as we know, there are some shenanigans, let's put it that way, who are actually establishing NGOs that do not exist. So you don't just look at a paper. You have to verify indeed that this thing exists and the report is quite valid. So by the time you finish, it's around October, September. And these are some of the challenges that we're facing. We were not having these problems and the current challenge now because of the ability of some of the NGOs to go through this cushion the impact and go through them their own finances using their own finances up until that time. But this problem is more pronounced this year. Why is it more pronounced this year? It's because of the financial crisis. Food has become expensive, so they all have a squeeze. Naturally, we understand that there's got to be something. So we're not just taking this thing lightly. We think that there's a need to do a complete overhaul of that Act and even how we function, including things of this nature, that we require an accounting measure to happen over 3 months. I mean, 3 year cycle. Something of that nature, something that would not necessarily require you to go through all your NPOs, by the way, which are something to the tune of almost 50,000, 70,000 of them in the, how many, yeah, somewhere between that figure. To go through all of them and doing this management examination and the governance issues during that period. So you do it once in 3 years, including those kinds of proposals. That's what we are looking at. We would like to ask honorable members to also encourage those who do know, because none of those NPOs actually does know that you have to comply with all these things. You get told when you register that all these things are needed at the time when you register. So we need just to, and some of them, by the way, is actually capacity issue.
Yes.
So we also need to capacitate them as well. It's our responsibility. We take that responsibility. So it's a whole lot of work that we're looking at right now. I think it was last week, if it's not this week, where the management and the external people are going through a complete discussion on that bill, on things that we have said they must input, they must actually look at. We're looking forward at putting the bill before Parliament sometimes early next year, so that certain amendments could be made to make it easier for the functioning of those NPOs. Shortage of social workers, yes, we do have. I think even the document you noticed that there is a need to augment on social workers. By the way, I think as we went through the annual report, you may have noticed that there are some challenges that we're having with the universities, but we think that it is important that on a continuous basis we increase the number of our social workers who are available out there in the field. It may well be necessary that, like Minister Mutsoaledi did, we recall those who are out there in other fields who have diverted from the profession of social work, so that they help from time to time because of this high need that we have. I mean, just at registration now, we're going to be the schools program, health in schools, which we, by the way, have signed last week with health, that is going to be done, is going to require an enormous number of social workers as well on that. So we're quite mindful of the fact that we're dealing with that. I just want to just deal with the issue of the possibility of people using grants, using funds for using adoption for purpose of acquiring yes, of acquiring funds. It's a very, very difficult thing. If you can ask a question, honourable members, about whether the current foster care grant or foster care arrangement is meant for poor people only, because it does have connotation that it's actually meant for poor people. The rich people may not necessarily. Because as they look at it, they think that if I'm being offered a foster care grant, why it's not for me to adopt, because I do have. Otherwise, government would not be offering me this thing as a rich person. So it has those connotations. We are mindful of that as well. But we're saying, as South Africans, vulnerability is a problem, and Constitution says we need to take care of the most vulnerable as well at any given point. So where there is a vulnerable situation, we need to move in with this kind of a thing. The difficulty comes where you have to monitor how the grants are being used. And it's not just the foster care grant, by the way. Even the child support grant, we get views that says child support grant is not being used properly. We know the old age pension, some of the older gogis are actually being harassed and their monies have been taken away from them. And some of them even just use it for different things, which are not quite true. It's a very, very enormous task that lies ahead of us. I think we need to conduct education on an ongoing basis on how and what the grants should be used for. I'm not sure how we can really move into a situation and say, you know, these children are yours, these ones are not yours, how do we compare and so on. As I say, however, if a situation like this emerges, it's not a fact that we should stand back and leave it, Dr. Mavi. Obviously, social workers should come in and evaluate from time to time whether indeed that kind of abuse is happening, where the case in point. But it's very difficult to legislate again and to actually monitor. But we do take the point. Chair, we take your point of having those arrangements at the provincial level, where, you know, dedicated time can be set aside. I mean, we're doing it right now with justice on the probation services currently, so similar arrangement can be made. I have a case in front of me, very difficult case, which I have to decide on. It's a case of a man who wants to be recognized as a father, a parent. The child has been fully adopted by a different couple elsewhere, here in the country. The mother, biological mother to the child, has passed on. The child was adopted after the mother, biological mother, has passed on. At that time, nobody knew where the father is and who the father is, because this is a single parent who passes on. The child gets adopted. The husband, or not the husband, the boyfriend, emerges from the woodwork. He writes to the department to say, I need to see my child. This child has already been adopted elsewhere by other parents. The child does not know, probably where she is, that I have a father somewhere who's living in the first instance. And I may actually have been fully adopted because they were still very small. So issue of disclosure is extremely important in that case. You can see, I mean, in a case like that one. What are we likely to do? Are we likely to give the child, the man, some kind of loose parental rights? That's not a child to know who the father, my biological father, is. It's a very, very difficult thing. The short thing I think that we can say, obviously I can't on record in public like this also disclose what we're likely to say, but I'm just indicating a case in point, which is a very, very extremely difficult case to judge on. The questions that we're asking ourselves is where was the father? He may come back and say, I must come back from being hit by the Damascus light. Now I am asking for pardon. I want to be Paul, no longer Saul. Things of that nature. What do you do? But the reality is that there are parents who are bringing up the child. So we'll see. But as Chair was saying, there are very many cases which we are studying and looking at that has actually set this precedent. Disability grant. Honourable members would recall that in the social amendment to the Social Assistance Act that we were doing now recently, this element was there of removing, recognizing a child who's disabled as a disabled child, whether from whatever kind of parent, so that the means test is not applied. I can't remember what happened to that amendment. It does look like because of the fact that we ended up not amending the actual definition of a disability.
Yeah.
It then gets coupled with that thing. I'm not sure if ever we can draw it alone and bring it back alone, that amendment. If we can't, obviously, for those other reasons of us having to work with health to improve the primary health care issues and getting our hospitals and clinics working to take care of those people of the chronic illnesses so that we can redefine finally the disability. I think we'll have to deal with it along those lines because it may not be quite easily extractable out of that definition. It also can't be a regulation because a regulation will have to flow from that definition. So we are pleading that we really just be given that opportunity to go through that process with the health and define disability once and for all as we go on. We have a meeting, this program that we were discussing earlier on of Brazil. You can see that it actually deals with the issues of hunger, ability to eat and take your medicine. Health department has gone on the same program to look at how primary health care is being worked on in Brazil. So we're meeting next week with Minister and his team to look at how we can collaborate and begin that kind of a dot system, that site, which is the beginning of that process that we agreed upon, things that we have got to put in, measures that we've got to put in place. Thank you very much, Chair. I suppose that we have dealt with the issues as raised. Thanks.
I'd like to finish the Brazil report, which is quite a few pages. Just one question, Honourable.
Okay. The CDA report, Minister, I haven't seen the CDA report for this year yet. Is it out already? And the other short question before you answer, is there any criteria? We are battling with this problem of social workers. And even those that do get bursaries entering universities, the output is not what the intake is.
Is there any criteria to not allow those students to switch from social work course to something else while they get a, while they start off with a social work bursary? Thank you.
I'll check the CDA report. I suppose we're talking about the annual report. Yeah, I'll check how far we are, whether I can. I really cannot remember on my feet. Like this. It has not come out. What I do know is that I've long signed off the, what is this, forward, Lana? I'm not sure what is happening. We'll check on that because it, how does a CDA account? It would have to be in the annual report of the department because they are not quite an entity. They have not been set up in terms of the act. Let me check those nitty-gritties. I do know that we have signed that off, right?
Report to Parliament, to us. Yeah, maybe we can just check. Maybe it's maybe line somewhere it needs to be ATC or something. It needs to be referred to us. We can check the papers even today and just make sure.
We'll also check from our side because the delay may be
yeah,
our side as well.
But we haven't made part of our progress because by that time, but we'll check again. Yeah, with a clock of papers in it.
Social workers, the change of course. It's a very difficult one. I don't know what to say. In my previous life, I've had to deal with the students of agricultural scientists. We discovered the same thing, that actually those who arrive in that course are those who have deviated from somewhere, from math or something.
Yeah.
They end up there as a last resort. Is it possible to get people not changing minds in South Africa, in our true democracy life, like we are? I'm not sure. Because you can't force them.
No.
They will deviate.
Mm.
We will be happy to remain with some 90%, I think. All we have to do is to keep encouraging. As we responded to the question that was asked in Parliament, we did say that we are continuously evaluating what are the reasons why some of the people are deviating. And based on those reasons, we keep coaching and counseling those who need to stay there. But in every profession, every other degree that people study, they always deviate. All we have to do is to continue encouraging, as long as we don't lose the entire 50%, 60%, maybe something like 10%. Some of the people who end up outside, as we gave the reasons, they vary from lack of interest to whatever, even though right at the beginning, they would have said that, yes, we are interested. But we really are concerned about that matter. We know that we cannot stick to 100%. We require more and more social workers in our country. Thank you, Chair. Is there no way, Chairperson, that we can look at all the people and bring in some sort of something to get them to train as social workers? People who are a bit older, not just your students, which would then lower our risk. That's all. Just an idea.
Some
of our older women that are out there, that are any way doing work that we want them to do, use those people, get them into some qualification that will lower our risk then of young people changing course, because we have people that are already doing this work that is not qualified.
It's a good question, and I think it's a good thought, because they've done it to the Huguenot College and the learnership. The people start off with some kind of NQF level qualification, and yes, and then they do the part-time course. So I think, Minister, something for you to chew on. And you know, women are very stable. Yeah, and mature students perform better than students with no life experience at all. The University of Life actually boosts you when you start studying very late in your life, because you've got all the life experience.
they laugh always when I say in my previous life that when we grew up, there were probably two social workers in the entire region.
Mm.
And all these women of prayer go to prayer days on Thursdays used to be the social workers. And we used to know that when they are passing, we used to call them shushu worker is passing now. They are our shushu workers. Thank you, sister.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mabe, Minister, for a very interesting presentation. You can see if the committee can keep you here for the whole day, we'll do that. But thank you very much. If you want to leave, it's fine, but we're going to keep the minister. Honourable members, can you just go back to our report? We have no comments. You can just say that you have no comments. But we need to go back to page 5. Is it page 5? Page 4. Okay. Well, I was at page 5 already. Page 4, challenges. We said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the second paragraph on the bottom. The implication for this growth is that there will be an increased demand for social assistance for the elderly. Another challenge is that about 11 million to 18 million of the population still needs to be included in the scheme to avoid them being dependent on public social security. Okay. And then we have the paragraph on corruption. Honourable members, do you have anything on that? Okay. Then we go to page 5. Yes,
sir. I think the good thing to note, in line with what we're discussing in that challenge, because that challenge may actually be an opportunity. The opportunity on that side is that the reverse actually is helpful, in that you then also have your younger generation. If they are fed like this, they grow older, but it's people who can now be getting into those businesses, because there's a business aspect of this, who are no longer getting into the other kinds of your social assistance, who are self-reliant. So you could take that money and use it at the end for the older person. So I don't know if I'm making sense. Am I? Dependent on
For at the younger level. But you will also have people, if you have a prosperous society, well, older people that are less dependent on the state. Because if they have a contribution, the state will be paying what they've contributed. Okay. But you will have an older population. Okay. Page 5. And I just want to remind members, it's page 5 of 22. Unless you get over to that. On the population pyramid, this is, I think, we're coming back to the minister's comment. According to the challenge of the old population pyramid, it was noted that Europe had 100 years to address this challenge, while South Africa and Brazil have a short period of time to address it. The reduction of the young population who are supposed to contribute to the social security means that there is a need for the federal government to revise the existing social security model. And that was a comment that came from the Brazilians themselves. But it makes sense to review your policies, especially your population policies, and also your social services policies from time to time, and looking at the growth and the development of the population in that respect.
So once again, Swedish, for instance, have gone through this on a longer time, but they are now learning from us.
So they are also reviewing. I'm agreeing with your review from time to time. But even the Europeans, they were part of Sweden, come to South Africa to learn from South Africa, even though we are beginning, because we are reviewing using their own lessons, doing it differently. So they want to just move on to the where the world is going immediately. Thanks.
Honourable Member Nelson and Honourable Member Makola.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the meeting with the ministry, we remember that the UPT minister was later joined by the minister himself. And what about the memorandum of understanding? It's already signed.
And then the turnaround time for social assistance applications. The delegation was told that the turnaround time for an application for social assistance since 2009 is 30. So Anne is missing. You have that? Turnaround time for social assistance. And then reduction of the young population and the population pyramid on page 5. Yeah, page 5. And then the on the population pyramid on page 5. And then N. We've got N. And then in terms of the meeting with the Ministry of Social Development, we met with the Deputy Minister of Social Development, Mr. Anur Ruano, as well as the Minister of Social Development. And what we need to say is on page 6 that the Memorandum of Understanding has since been signed between the two countries. Okay? The one that they gave us at the meeting. You're now on page 6, Honourable Members. Anything on page 6? Any corrections? Ms. Gabriela Bastos?
Next line. The delegation
I think what the committee must just do, you just have to find comment again for spelling errors. And especially when you talk about policy, there should be some caps. You can't just have small. So when you look at on one of the sub programs falling under the Zero Hunger program is the Bolsa Familia program, which aims to ensure the right to adequate food. Okay. Here you are referring again to a single registry for all social programs. And here we said previously a national single registry. So we just need to be consistent with that. Okay? Page 7.
just the last on page 7 on top. Brazil has also implemented a similar food security program in Mozambique. Can we say has also implemented a similar food security program with the Mozambican government? Because one country can't implement a program unilaterally. So it's in joint partnership with the Mozambican government. Can we do that? Or can we say Brazil have assisted Mozambique to implement? Okay? Brazil has assisted Mozambique to implement a similar program. Full stop. Then, yes, Honorable Member Mafolo,
under discussion, furthermore, in part, the food surveillance system conducted periodically by the Ministry of Social Development and Fight Against Hunger has noted positive impact, not as bad. Can page 7, reduction of infant, the last sentence, fight against hunger has.
Monitoring and evaluation. If you go to the last sentence, to further and strengthen monitoring and evaluation, comma, the ministry and the municipalities conducted community service to assess whether services it renders meet the needs of the communities. Enrollment to education improved due to the positive impact Bolsa Familia has had on family income. Research found that since its implementation, children who had dropped out of school had returned to school because families can afford school fees and uniforms. There's an S missing and a full stop. Okay? And then an S, another S again, after fees and school fees and uniforms. Right. Page 8.
What I picked up was under corruption. Nevertheless, an inquiry committee was established by Parliament. To identify corruption practices, In addition, the government has a national website which the public can access to find out about the performance of a certain program. Page 9. Social assistance program. Social assistance program is a non-contributory scheme. See, I was a teacher, I know these things. I used to have a red pen. Even when I was head of department, I would send the letters back to be every time. She directed very soon. Yeah, I don't sign anything that I think was top. Yes. Honorable Member Ula, yes? Yeah? Migration from rural to urban areas resulted in problems of lack of housing to accommodate the increasing population in cities. Resulted in problems of lack of housing, to accommodate the increasing population in cities. Within the social assistance program, within the social assistance program, there are a number of sub-programs, including PIAF, discussed earlier. Other sub-programs include, and you have the program. Page 10. First program. Yeah, again, you just have to make certain about the titles because it's missing.
The numbers of the elderly.
Hello.
Try another one. Okay, that's better. On page 10, where there are statistics, even the coverage, the numbers of the elderly, is that a correct figure? Because I, just proportionately, it looks so significantly less of the BPC. Isn't there a few zeros missing? Thank you. The number of beneficiaries.
We are researching it, and she just don't do the car. Check.
And then the bottom of page 3,
yeah.
All the effects of the information program, the state has the strength of the information
program. Page 10, oh, where is that?
In order to effectively implement the program.
Can you just tell me on that?
Bottom of page 10, the fourth line. In order to effectively implement these programs, the state had to not strengthen their information systems, policies, and management.
All this policy to use your Microsoft Word spelling function more effectively. We can't spend hours correcting spelling errors on reports. We need to correct the context and the content of reports. In response to the question of ensuring public participation in lawmaking, paragraph 1 of page 11, can we go to the meeting with the Natal municipality? The delegation was welcomed by the mayor of Natal, Mrs. Wilma Defaria. She congratulated South Africa for hosting a successful Soccer World Cup. And then I want to propose that we take up the whole of the second sentence. She then handed over a municipal official to please the delegation. And say, we start with a new sentence. The delegation was briefed on the implementation of Balls of Amelia in Natal. Balls of Amelia is implemented integrally between the Ministries of Social Development and all the other titles that goes with it, education and health. Agents from these ministries and CROSS, including school directors, were trained to assist families to apply and receive Balls of Amelia benefits. The municipality also conducted a successful public campaign to educate the public about Balls of Amelia. As a result of these efforts, Natal managed to register 46,427 beneficiaries. I think what we should put in the sentence here, you remember that the municipalities act as agents of the of government, of the central government. So I think we should, they don't have a central government, they have a federal government. Minister, am I correct? So they act as implementing agents of Balls of Amelia on behalf of federal government. Okay? On the municipality of Natal act as implementing agents of the Balls of Amelia on behalf of the federal government.
the cent- if you look at Bolsa Familia Center, the center is divided into sections or units that deal with different aspects that applicants or beneficiaries will require assistance of. And then this is done to avoid applicants having to queue. Okay, that's fine. Understand. Page 12. Melissa, what we can say is we were working. Yeah. Never a dull moment on study tours. This is how we worked. It was quite a tight program. And everyone was with us all the way. No one disappeared. We couldn't account for him or her. Anything on page 12? So we like 50%, we just over 50% of the report. Have members picked up anything with the eagle eye? Page 13. Okay, when you look under discussion, the last sentence, in cases where the family does not have consent, the center provides. Does not give consent, comma, the center provides services to the whole family. And when that does not work, comma, it removes the victim to a place of safety. The center, when you look at, is there anything that members would like to add on top of page 30? The health center, comma, repair.
Chair, it's like the health center, there is something...
Can you sit on your
microphone? Sorry, you want me to say something because today I'm quiet. When you come back to the meeting, you become lost. Chair, the health center, there is something which is missing, which is very important, that those patients do not pay. Yeah. We have to indicate that it's a free service. Thank you. Yes, service is free.
And you have all the specialists?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's easier. Mm-hmm. I think with the Kaiser Federal Bank, we just have to make sure which Ministry of Social Development are we talking about. What, as a minister, there's two ministries that deal with these things. You see, there's a part of the title is missing. Or whether it's something of Social Security, the Minister of Social Security. Page 14. I think, Minister, what was really good for us was also the statistics we met with the research institutions. And that really gave us an insight, a holistic insight, into the programs and projects we visited and the on-site visits that we've had. That really helped us. We even met with the UNDP in Brazil, which was fantastic. Yes, Honourable Member Nelson.
I think it's in a way that the Bolsa Familia is conditional. It's linked to education and it's linked to the clinic, to health, yes. So the children must attend school and it's actually... monitored. Implemented in places where there are no supplies of health and education services. That's not, I don't think that is the interest.
Here, it does not use proxy means test and has no coverage and has coverage of 25%. It is implemented in places where there are no supplies of health and education services. It is implemented, its implementation involves a strong role of municipalities at the local level through the use of the new public management tool.
But why are we saying it is implemented in places where there are no supplies of health and education services?
Yes, Honourable Member Mafoko. I think what we are looking for is those requirements for the child. Obviously, it's falling under Bolsa Familia. No, the child should go to school immunization.
Because it's conditional, and we're not saying anywhere in the curriculum that there's conditionality.
How do you want to talk about the conditionality?
Yeah. Just the conditionality must be implemented. I think that is what the minister also said, that is what one of the best practices that we have picked up from there. The education, but they brought health in it, health is inclusive into the as well. Communication.
But on page 6, the second bullet, strengthening the exercise of basic social rights in the areas of health and education. Through the complement of conditionality, thus contributing to families unable to justify or integrate intergenerational families.
They speak to health and
But the person
call you, but now I'm a little bit lost because when we are talking about the conditionality of this program, we were saying in South Africa a person can register a child and get the birth certificate. He or she will qualify for the grant, but there, if you don't have, you don't qualify only by birth certificate, you also qualify with a clinic card, what, those requirements.
In South Africa. Yes, yes. Now, yeah, I want, and it's a small amount, right? But if you look at, say, the Bolsa Familia Center, how it works with the application, okay? And then you look on page 10 also, the Bolsa Familia program at the school. It's coordinated by the Ministry of Social Development and Fight Against Hunger, the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Health, and the Special Secretariat, la, 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 okay. As the beneficiaries of the Bolsa Familia program are able to access school and stay in the school network, and then they go on and on and on. Okay. Right. Page 14. This was just the presentation by the research institution, the Applied Economic Research Institution on the Southern American research that I've done on assistance to families. So it's the Uruguayan experience, the Brazilian experience, and so on. The Chile Vienta and Chile Solidario programs. I think what is, of, if you look on page 16, the research conducted in 2008 by the center revealed that the Bolsa Familia has had the following impact on families. And I think if we wanted to stay very long at that presentation, but we were pushed for time, but it was a very interesting presentation. By someone that has been, but been doing research, Minister, on that topic since the beginning of the program. So he had that institutional knowledge, you know, which is a good thing. It's actually an asset to have such a researcher. The research conducted and revealed that the Bolsa Familia had the following impact on families, even though it contributes only 10% into the family income, it was found that it contributed to 21% decline in income inequality. I think that's a very good statement. It has contributed to the increase in the family consumption on food and clothing. So I think in Afrikaans you say elke bietjie help, every little bit helps. You know, increased families' access to health care and vaccination. I think there's honorable nothing for this. I think if you look at the result of the research, it actually tells you the impact. So you had healthier children because they had to do the vaccination. Increased family opportunities to access or seek employment because of the skills training that they're linked with. This has resulted in women in particular being involved in family decision-making over financial issues. This was further found to dispel perceptions that Bolsa Familia may lead to independency by discouraging beneficiaries from participating in the labor market. I think if you look at Bolsa Familia just for a period of 2 years and not for a lifetime. So it takes people out of that dependency cycle and, on their own. Challenges? Page 15.
Okay, we're going to page 16. Meeting with the Institute for Applied Economic Research, Dr. Yerba Abraão de Castro. Okay. I think the thing that I've observed, Honourable Minister, was how simple things are in Brazil. They would have prefab clinics and that's it. And because the cost of erection of the facilities is cheaper, they can then put in more money into services. So I think that is also something that we can look at. And also make our public aware that even if it's a prefab building, it doesn't mean you're going to get lit up. You're going to get an inferior service. Because it wasn't a brick and mortar building, it was a prefab building wonderfully. It was cool, it had all the facilities, it had everything, it was well kept, and it was clean. And brand new, yeah. And you had your pediatrician there, you had your specialist there. And so I think you would have spent in less than 50% on the capital outlay. And then if I just look at that facility. And the office, the district offices is in residential areas. Smack bang. I think they do rezoning or something because they would buy a house and convert it into an office. In some cases, as I'm sure it only happens when there's no buildings. So they would. So it was quite interesting how they've migrated into the to favelas and the other areas. Yeah.
Back home, can you talk loud about this so that we move South Africans?
Yeah.
We have Wendy houses and then what? Park houses that were to be built. There's a whole lot of fight in South Africa against that. So we really need to hear you talking loud about that.
Yeah. Even. Yeah. Yeah, it's a mine shift. Even your police stations, then you can build. And it's, I don't think it's all about maintaining.
Yeah.
How do you maintain it? See, because when they look derelict, they look bad. That's all I said. One. Prefab.
Very
efficient. And you get that kind of. You see, if you're going to build a hospital in the desert of brick and mortar, you're going to have flat walls because of the shifting sand. So then your prefab option is your best option. Yeah. Other members. We need another Indaba. It's now going for 1:30. And we are still full of enthusiasm. We have a sitting at 2:00. And I promise to take honorable member my four list. We have an appointment to keep. The Board of our Media program is located under the Social Assistance Program. Social assistant. Okay, page 17.
and dedication. Are you sure about the 40 million illiterate people? Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yeah, but you can see that in the relations, even the social relations here. Page
18. 17, paragraph
3. Is it 17, Honourable Member
Kuma? Yes, the recent policy shift recognized.
Eagle eye. This is nothing. Good. Okay. Anything else on page 17? No. Oh. No wonder we were all so tired. Page 18. Take national art in discussion, professional sport. And then, however, with the monitoring of children's performance by the trainer, a child can be recommended for selection for professional sport by the Ministry of Sport. We had the opportunity to be presented to the Brazilian Parliament by the speaker of the Brazilian Parliament. So we all went on stage and so that the whole Parliament could see us. And after that appearance, all the women just stormed us. So it was like chaos in the Parliament. But there seems to be an organized chaos in the Parliament anyway. Yeah. And we said even that's why I'm saying things are a bit informal. We said that the staff with the stomach out there will never happen in our Parliament. I think we are a bit more conservative than they are. Yeah, with dress codes and stuff. And also in terms of they are seem to be a bit formal when it comes to relationships, yeah. And to working relationships. I think Honourable Member said that they had a hard time and this has been well in that part of it. Yeah, they speak on the fountain chamber. Yeah. Mm. And wearing jeans and tight jeans and short skirts. No, we can't.
The relationship between NGOs.
Yes.
Is it 19?
Page 19, yes.
Yeah, the delegation was told that it is difficult for Parliament to monitor.
Yeah. And it's a vibrant parliament with lobby groups. They seem to have done, I think they're further ahead with lobbying than us. Yeah, it's a real people's parliament.
Yeah.
And lots of people sitting.
Okay.
Yeah. I think our conservative things as well are traumatized. The President, the Supreme Court, and the Members of Parliament have the competency to introduce legislative processes. Since the 1992, the public can participate in the lawmaking. However, this is still a challenge because of a large population of Brazil. As a result of the majority of people has not been involved. There's something wrong with the sentence. However, this is still a challenge because of the large population in Brazil. The majority of the people has not yet been involved in public participation. The result is that the public participation in Brazil is still very low. Notwithstanding this challenge, there had been instances when legislative processes attracted significantly a lot of public inputs. For instance, a bill that prohibits candidates with criminal records from running for elections attracted a lot of public inputs. Public participation on the bill resulted in 1.5 million signatures, I'm sure, for the bill. Or against. We can't say that you will find out what signatures are for or against. Is it for the bill?
Okay.
Yeah. Key findings. I'm going to spend a few minutes here, and then we're nearing the end, members. We're almost there. South Africa and Brazil have a number of striking similarities. They also face similar challenges such as high levels of poverty and inequality, exclusion of the majority from the benefits of social economic development and unemployment. I would say, we should say historical exclusion. Of the majority from the benefits of social economic development and unemployment. Okay, but unemployment doesn't make sense. From benefits, unemployment is not a benefit. Hence, two countries called. Yes? Hence, the two countries concluded that social development strategies are crucial for social and economic development of its citizens. This, therefore, underscores the importance of the two countries learning from each other's best practice. Just a apostrophe there. While South Africa has made considerable strides in its poverty alleviation programs, it faces challenges regarding strengthening synergies between these programs and address gaps in the coverage. Hence, the focus of the Department of Social Development is to establish a comprehensive social security system. One of the key components of achieving this is developing systems that integrate services of the relevant departments. The Brazil Single Registry provides a good best practice for South Africa to learn from. A single registry will enable stakeholder departments such as social development, health, home affairs, education, public works, and agriculture to integrate the data to enhance the profiling of the beneficiaries.
Yes.
But that's to integrate the data. These departments have already forged collaboration in the implementation of policies such as an extended EPWP and so on, with the recent policy pronouncement of social assistance regulations that requires departments of health, education, and social development to integrate their services, food security, among others.
However, alignment between different departments is still a big challenge. For instance, Social Security System, the Department of Home Affairs, and Department of Justice, and Constitutional Development still face a challenge of integrating their data and their systems on women who may be receiving both the Child Support Grant and the Child Maintenance Grant from fathers of the children. Furthermore, there is a need to align Department of Social Development with the database of the Department of Home Affairs regarding records on changes that happen in families, such as death, managed births, and other changes. Again, there is also a system of integrating such a database with banks, federal government, and the agency, and an agency that keeps such records provides a good best practice for South Africa to emulate.
I also just said to you just where you started after, however. For instance, one, two, three, four, five. Line 5 is however.
Yeah,
almost at the end, it says, for instance. It said, for instance, social security. Can we say social assistance? Because we are still moving towards social security. We are right now at the program of social assistance, which is the first pillar. The Department of Social Development, through South African Social Security Agency, is it not? The Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Justice, there are just too many ends here. Comma after Home Affairs. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Oh, no. Yeah, no, it's the same department. And that end is fine. Still face challenges of integrating their data system on women who may be receiving both a child and support grant maintenance from the father solution. There is a combination of issues here. I don't know how we can put it, but the Department of Social Development and Home Affairs in South Africa already operate a linked system. The difference and the problem comes between these two linked systems. Let's look at them as one, with the justice. So the problem is much more with linking with justice, more than the two linking, because the two are already linked back to back. Home Affairs, and it is for that reason that we're able even to confirm in the IGAP model that we're implementing in Free State, to confirm a grant on one day, because they are linked, the systems are now linked. So I'm not sure how it's... No, all over. It used to be over 60 days, it's now 12 days. We are on average of 12 days.
The IGAP is only in Free State, right?
Even where there's no IGAP, because of the linkages, you're now down to 14 days between these two systems, because they are linked. Remember, we used to take 3 months. That's why we gave the social relief of distress for a period of 3 months, because a person would take 3 months before you know.
Development and Home Affairs.
It needs to be, that's why it talks about the child maintenance. Because I think he wants to speak to child maintenance.
Then, 21. I think if I look at the last paragraph on page 21, One of the challenges in the payment of social grants is the problem of long queues at pay points. SASSA can therefore learn from the Brazilian system of grant payment schedules, whereby the schedule links the card number beneficiaries to the calendar date. SASSA, just take out African, may consider introducing a similar system to that of a Brazilian, a Brazil, where beneficiaries can be categorized according to their birth dates, and banks allocate what? It's hanging. So can you help us, the authors of this report? You don't have a report. On page 21, then we go to page 22. Allocate dates. Thank you. In Brazil, basic social protection is provided through social assistance reference centers. These work as focal points for a network of social assistance services at the local level, basically driving guidance to families on how to access public services. They work with specialized social assistance reference centers in case of more serious social breakdown involving sexual abuse, child labor, and homeless people. South Africa can learn from this initiative by integrating its programs like Victim Empowerment Program into an overall I think what is missing in this report is a concluding paragraph where we need to thank the embassy in Brazil for the assistance and their support to the portfolio committee. They really went out of the way to help us compile the itinerary of the portfolio committee and really ensured that we arrived on, at most of our meetings, we arrived on time. It's no fault of our own. I think that bodes very well for us. And that also that we, I think it was earlier when we, in the report, we said there's a recommendation in terms of the issue of the Africans in prison and the awareness program and the advocacy issue. It then also needs to come into the conclusion. And then we will then have a further interaction that the department will come back to us to say, Minister, you have a memorandum that the memorandum of agreement that the minister signed with her counterpart in Brazil. I think the deputy minister has signed on your behalf. How are you going to implement that memorandum of agreement? And I think we want to thank the minister for making that draft memorandum available for us for the time. I think it's much appreciated. So that the minister and the DG will come and brief us on the implementation of that. I think, Minister, we also want to put in the report that there was also a memorandum of agreement between the Minister of Sports and the Brazilian Minister of Sports. And they gave us a CD of a program, we immediately all said, but that this also has a kind of a social crime prevention element in it, because it was about youth at risk. And if you could follow up on that program, because I think in terms of the strategy of social crime prevention, especially in terms of focusing on youth development and youth at risk, I think there's an opportunity for working together with the Ministry of Sports in this country and social development, and obviously we're cascading it down to the provinces. So I think that recommendation is set in Brazil, colleagues. was also one of the issues that we need to put into the report. I'm sure we can make the CD available to you through the secretariat. Any of the other recommendations? I think maybe in terms of our experience, I think we really have a good understanding. I thought he'll die without us. If we can, I see the WAP is here with us, that'll be fine. But I think what we can say also is that we came back wiser and more informed. The fact that we went to a country where social development has a good working relationship with made our trip actually the more relevant. That we just didn't go to a country that has no relevance to us. And I think the social makeup of a country really benefits us. Honourable Minister?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first thing is that we have now found the official name of the department. If I may, Social Development and Fight Against Hunger. Secondly, it's a very brilliant thing to add the Ministry of Social Development sports recommendation in that already we work together in that substance abuse thing. So it will really also help that in other countries it's quite a arts and culture and social development. Yeah. Thank you very much.
We then adopt the report with those amendments. Honourable Member Mafolo. And
with the amendments that the committee has made, move for adoption.
Honourable Member Coleman.
Second to the adoption. Honourable Chair, I second the adoption. Okay. Thank you.
Should we not also just acknowledge the very disastrous results for the way we were affected and how they have taken us? Just in that conclusion.
I
just want to inform members. I know that members are rushed for. But we start by the statements, and the second item will be voting. So please come back. We need plenary there. You'll see on your cell phones once you switch on. They say we're voting today. Yes.
Meeting to join.
Thank you.
second